Just to check. Okay, we're ready to go. Can we call the roll, please?
Commissioner Bloom. Commissioner Secord. Commissioner DiBernardo. Commissioner Mercurimi. Commissioner Neely. Commissioner Reese.
Here.
Commissioner Sanchez.
Here.
Commissioner Schellenberger. Commissioner Stone. Chair Wan, you have a quorum.
Before we move to public comment, we have a new commissioner that I'd like to introduce. He's here representing the State Lands Commission, Commissioner Mario DiBernardo. Welcome, and would you like to say a few words?
Well, thank you. Just a few words. I'm honored to be here on behalf of the State Lands Commission. I've been with the commission for almost 4 years and as legislative liaison and staff counsel, and I've been grateful for our partnership with the commission and also for the help that your legislative liaison has provided to me, Sarah Christie. We've created plenty of trouble in the Capitol, and I look forward to working with you all in the future. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
If I may, I'd like to also welcome the new commissioner and just let the commission know that his work last year or this year helping us deal with that whole question of legal fees, paying for legal services, was invaluable. And without his help, I'm not sure the result would have been the same as it turned out to be. So thank you for your help, and I'm happy to see you here.
Yes, our thanks again, and welcome. And with that, we'll open the public hearing. We'll go to public comment. Oh, excuse me. We need a report out of closed session. You are correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In closed session, the Commission authorized the filing of an amicus brief in Pacific Palisades versus City of Los Angeles and received litigation information in another matter. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we'll go to public comment. You have 3 minutes. Webb Otis.
Good morning. My name is Webb Otis, and I am representing the Marin County-based Alliance for Local Sustainable Agriculture. We are submitting a memorandum to you today, and copies have been submitted for the staff and for the commissioners that you probably just received. And supporting documents to you identifying scientific misrepresentations and other inappropriate conduct reflected in the California Coastal Commission November 10th letter to NOAA, Office of Ocean and Coastal Resources Management. The subject of the letter is a proposed special use permit for the Drake's Bay Oyster Company. More importantly, our memorandum is a request that the commissioners promptly, one, direct that the November 10th letter to NOAA be withdrawn, two, that the commissioners investigate and remedy this egregious staff action. Our request is made in the interest of preserving jobs and housing for over 40 workers at the Drake's Bay Oyster Company, in the interest of West Marin businesses that would suffer if the Drake's Bay Oyster Company were closed, in the interest of researchers and students from numerous educational institutions, also in the interest of survey respondents by the local press reflecting an 82% support of the Drake's Bay Oyster Company. And finally, in the interest of the people of the state of California, whose rights to shellfish agriculture and a sustainable food source remain protected by state law. Last Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Oliver Wanger wrote, "The public cannot afford sloppy science and prescriptions that ignore California's needs." I might change that to read, The public cannot afford false science and prescriptions that ignore California's needs. Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Madam Chair, yes. just a comment. I just want to make clear to the speaker and everyone else who is watching this that the politics of personal destruction are not going to be tolerated here. I'm very familiar with what went on with Drake's Bay Oyster and the National Park Service, the claims, the spurious claims that were made there, and we're not going to tolerate that, those kinds of spurious, untrue claims being made against our staff. So from my perspective, stick to the merits, don't attack the individual's integrity. I'm very proud of the integrity of our staff, and we will respond to the letter we got. But please keep the personal attacks and the demonization of individuals away from this this matter and this commission.
Mr. Neil Desai.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Neil Desai. I'm a representative of the National Parks Conservation Association. First, I'd like to say, Peter, welcome back. It's great to have you, looking well. I'd like to comment on two items that are important to the National Parks Conservation Association in relation to coastal planning that protects our natural and social values as intended by the Coastal Act. One is an issue that the Coastal Commission and the staff has been involved in for several years. It does concern the Drake's Bay Oyster Company and the protection of the wilderness and the national natural values. I'd like to thank the staff for engaging in this effort, the commission for participation. I encourage continuing participation by this body. And I'd also like to ask the staff to determine how to collect the $61,000 fine levied against the Drake's Bay Oyster Company for operating for several months within the harbor seal protection area. This is a serious matter of natural resource protection. Clearly, the Coastal Commission is not sitting on buckets of cash, and it seems appropriate to collect and therefore send the message in a way that you can't just have a free ride by violating the Coastal Act. The other issue is of here in a little bit south is in Pacifica of Sharp Park Golf Course. This is a topic that I believe the commission has somewhat engaged in staff level. I'd like to encourage more participation. One member of the commission, Commissioner Mercurimi, has played an active role in helping to create sound policies and actions that protect the two endangered species, protect the public beach, a resource for all Californians. And I'd like to encourage the commission to continue playing a role. And with that, I'd like to say thank you for your great and hard work over the past year. It's been a tough budget climate for all of us, and I really appreciate the coordination that you folks have done with the National Park Service, an organization that I work with more directly. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes public comment. Before we go to the rest of the agenda, staff, are there any changes to the agenda to announce?
Yes, good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Changes to the agenda today on page 15, items 8A and 8B, the Trousdale application has been withdrawn by the applicant. And also on page 15, item 8F, DaCosta, we are recommending be moved to the consent calendar. For members of the public that are here today to speak to an item, you do need to fill out a speaker slip and indicate which item you're speaking to and whether you are in support or opposition to the staff recommendation. Also, if you have a cell phone or other electronic device that might interfere with the meeting, please turn it off or put it into a silent mode. Thank you.
And before we go and to open the rest of the agenda, it's a little bit unusual, but Mr. Douglas, could you come forward and come over here for a moment? Okay. Ah, it is what you did. Definitely. We wanted you right here. Yeah. Oh, boy, that would be nice. No, stand up. Stand up. This is an expression of gratitude from the Coastal Commission, and I'm proud to read this to you. On this, the occasion of the 25th year of Peter M. Douglas as the Executive Director of the California Coastal Commission, the commissioners, staff, and people of the state of California would like to express their enormous gratitude for a lifetime of commitment and service. The coast of California is a very special place, one that is worthy of protection. And without the dedication of Peter Douglas, this coast would be very different than it is. This state's coast is symbolic of its greatness and an important legacy for our children and grandchildren. Without the dedication, hard work, and perseverance of Peter Douglas, sometimes through great difficulties, that legacy would have been irreversibly changed. As he has said so many times, it is what you do not see that is the legacy of the Coastal Act and the Coastal Commission. And it is Peter Douglas who has led this legacy, this agency, to be unique in its commitment to upholding the promise of retaining the character of the California coast. At this time of appreciation for his past efforts, we are grateful that his indefatigable efforts continue. He is a symbol of all that is right with our state and with the people who dedicate their lives to public service. And this is from commissioners and staff. It's an assortment of pictures from, I believe they're taken from all of the publications of the Coastal Commission. We'll have it after Peter looks at it, and others will have it with the public. See it, and we've printed up this the commendation to you. I'm going to pass it around for everybody's, all of the commissioners' signatures. And are there any other commissioners who would like to have anything to say? Just a moment.
You know me well enough, I can't resist this moment to say a few words. And it's going to be brief. It's what you've heard me say before. The lifetime I've devoted to public service and the work for the public and the resources of the California coast has been a labor of love and continues to be that. And when you mention the greatest accomplishments of the Coastal Commission being the things we don't see, well, to me, the most proud accomplishment are the things you do see, that you see every meeting, and that is your staff, the people that work for the commission, for the public, who give above and beyond the call of duty, their responsibilities, because they're dedicated to public service and the mission of this agency. And that's one of the reasons why I love working here, and that's one of the reasons I've asked you to retain me as your director, as long as you have confidence in me, because you have such a terrific staff And I just love working with them on a mission that is going to be, continues to be, legacy evolving in progress. So thank you for this honor. I was totally surprised. I'm choked up, as you can tell. And I hope that I will continue to earn your trust and support in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Commissioner Stone? Yes, I'm passing that around for everyone's signature. Yeah, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. With that, I guess we'll open the meeting. And staff, you want to go to the first item?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Our first item is a statewide annual report. You may recall every year we try to bring you a report of our accomplishments in the Conservation and Open Space OTD program, and I'm happy to have Allison Hitt here today to give you a brief overview of that.
Thank you, Charles. Good morning, Commissioners. I work in statewide planning, specifically working with the open space offers to dedicate and easements. These are OTDs required as special conditions of permits, and the OTDs typically expire 21 years after they are recorded. So part of my job is to keep track of expiration dates in a database which I manage, as well as negotiate acceptance of them by nonprofits and local governments. The acceptance is the final step in securing the mitigation for previously issued permits. Today, I'm presenting our annual report, summing up our progress made in 2010. This year, we negotiated the acceptance of 40 open space offers to dedicate, 15 of which were TDCs in the Santa Monica Mountains. These TDCs retired 26 lots in the small lot subdivisions. Including the TDCs, these 40 acceptances account for more than 670 acres permanently protected. Overall, our accomplishments include the acceptance of 565 OTDs all the way from Del Norte County to San Diego. We have acreage data collected for about 60% of the accepted OTDs. We are currently working on gathering more acreage data as time permits. The current known acreage is 6,000 acres permanently protected since the program began. These 6,000 acres include wetlands, riparian, different types of ESHA, steep slopes, view sheds, and ag lands. Also, more than 1,000 lots have been retired through the TDC program in the Santa Monica Mountains. I have a few photos of the easements protected this year, starting in San Diego. This one, if you can see the orange outline, is 60 acres near UCSD, accepted by Friends of Los Penasquitos Canyon Preserve. It consists of steep slopes and coastal sage scrub habitat. A couple more photos of the same easement taken out of my car window at 50 miles an hour. This next easement is at Buena Vista Lagoon in Carlsbad. It consists of the wetland vegetation in the foreground. It was accepted by the Coastal Conservancy. The next two easements were also accepted by the Coastal Conservancy. They are both in Orange County. This first one is about 3 acres of steep hillsides next to Laguna Canyon Road. It's the hillside behind the building. This easement, also in Laguna, protects the steep hillside behind the homes, as well as Rim Rock Creek, which runs in front of the homes. We have many easements in the Santa Monica Mountains. This one consists of 150 acres of steep slopes behind Pepperdine University. It's that long ridge you can see in the photo behind the university. This one was accepted by the Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority. And finally, up in northern Monterey County, the Coastal Conservancy accepted this easement at Morro Coho Slough. It's about 6 acres of open water, wetland vegetation, as well as a buffer area. More photos of the same easement. And finally, this last slide is a graph of my upcoming workload. As you can see, 2011 and 2012 are the biggest years, with almost 100 OTDs due to expire in these 2 years. I've initiated work on many of the 2011 OTDs. However, the bulk of my time in the next 2 years will be spent ensuring that none of these are lost to expiration. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I just want to acknowledge and personally thank Allison as well as Liz Fuchs, the manager of this program, for the work involved in this. This work, as you can see, the things that you don't see in the places you see now, open space, it's the end result of many of your regulatory actions, and it really is the culmination of the work you see often through the permitting decisions, the planning decisions, and it's critical that these OTDs continue to be accepted so that we can protect the resources in perpetuity.
Yes, and I couldn't agree more, and I would like to thank you for the hard work. It's really important for us to know that when we require these as part of our permitting process, that as mitigation for the various impacts of development, that mitigation is actually going to happen. And without your hard work, that would not be the case. So we're very thankful for your effort, and we certainly appreciate it. That brings us, I think, to what, sea level rise? Is that the next item, 4.5?
Yes, this is going to be a very brief presentation.
Okay, thank you.
The Climate Change Task Force, which is a volunteer group of the Coastal Commission staff, we have reported to you several times in the past and given you detailed write-ups of the Coastal Act involvement and responsibilities for climate change and sea level rise. Today, I just want to let you know what we've been doing the last year, and we'll be back with you in early 2011 with some more detailed reports on sea level rise. But the focus, because of the furloughs and limited staff and heavy workload and the work of the Climate Change Task Force staff on other issues, we've narrowed our focus this year mainly to collaborative work with other agencies on the state's adaptation plan, the Natural Resources Agency adaptation plan, and most of those same agencies, including the State Lands Commission and BCDC and the Coastal Conservancy, on developing an interim guidance on the numbers and science to use in sea level rise decisions that involve sea level rise. That interim guidance is out for review right now. We will be, it's going to be posted on our website, and this is the collaborative effort of those other agencies. We will be coming back to you in early 2011 with more details. We also just received several grants, small grants, but grants that should provide some backup funding for our budget cuts so that we can continue to do some work on sea level rise. The critical thing that is important to tell the Commission today is that the other agencies and the Commission, we've all have a focused and consistent stand that the best available science should be used in these decision-making processes. And that's very important, and there's also a process to update the science as new information comes in. So we'll be keeping you informed about those details in 2011. And before we move on to the other part of the agenda, I did want to introduce a couple of staff members that are here today. Pat Beck, who is our longstanding human resources manager, and she's done a fabulous job for the commission. She's not here today, but she's retiring at the end of this month. She's done a terrific, terrific job. And one of the things she's done very well is succession planning in her group. And I'm pleased to introduce to you today Melanie Wong, who has been with us for quite some years, and she is the new Human Resources Manager for the California Coastal Commission. And Melanie, if you'll stand up. So as well as honoring Pat's work in her own role, she did a fabulous job of training and getting Melanie ready to take this job on. And I did want to let you all know that we do the human resources work for the Bay Conservation and Development Commission as well. We're on contract with them, and so she has a lot of responsibility for two agencies. Then the other person I'd like to introduce to you is Pamela Wu, Pamela just joined us early this month. Pamela, if you want to stand up. She comes from the State Compensation Insurance Fund. And I'm especially happy because now my workload should go down a little bit. She's filling the role of the Chief of Fiscal and Business Services. That position has been vacant since July, and we've been patching together all those duties, and I've been taking on quite a few of them, so I'm very thrilled to have her. So she just joined us, and we're looking for a long involvement of her work with you. She's learning new things because the State Compensation Insurance Fund is a quasi-state agency with different rules, but we're thrilled to have her. So thank you.
Madam.
Thank you, and thank both of you for being willing to work in this agency and to take on the tasks for us.
Madam Chair, if I may, I forgot to mention earlier when I made my comments that obviously, as you can see, I'm back. I'm in the process of managing my disease, and I want to thank all of you for your love and support and prayers, and many of you out in the audience over the last many months that have helped inspire me and help me heal and continue to heal. But most of all, I really want to thank your senior managers who stepped in and seamlessly took over as I stepped back. Susan and Charles leading that team, and of course Jack and Cheryl and Al and Lisa Allison stepping in to take on additional responsibilities in my absence. And I have a lot of comments from you, many of you, about how you saw it as a seamless transition. I think that's a testament to the kind of succession work that we have been doing. I think introductions here just show you more of our awareness of the importance of succession planning. And I just want to thank them publicly for, again, service above and beyond the call of duty during this period. It made it so much easier for me to concentrate on healing, knowing that this great team was in charge. So with that, I want to thank you all.
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair and Commissioner, that brings us to the Central Coast District, and that item 5 is the Deputy Director's report. I do have 3 waivers and 1 immaterial amendment to report, and I'm not aware of any objection to those items.
Any objections to finding concurrence? Seeing none, the Commission has concurred.
Item 6 is the consent calendar, and earlier today we recommended moving the DaCosta application 8F to the consent calendar, and we're in agreement with the applicant on the conditions, and I'm not aware of any objections.
Do I have a motion?
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Secord. Is there any objection to unanimous roll call? Seeing none, consent calendar item is approved.
That brings us to item 7A, and Madeline Cavalieri is here to present.
Good morning, Commissioners. Item 7A is an appeal of a coastal development permit approved by the City of Pismo Beach for construction of a new single-family residence and demolition and reconstruction of a garage on an adjacent lot. There is an addendum for this item in your district director's report that includes some additional details about the question of lot legality, but the addendum does not make substantive changes to staff's recommendation. Slide 2. The project site is located inland from the shoreline in a largely built-out residential neighborhood in the Shell Beach area of the city of Pismo Beach. Slide 3 provides an aerial view showing the site and the surrounding residential development. And slide 4 is a site plan of the project. The new residence is on lot 20, and the new garage and an existing residence are on lot 9. Lot 9 has road frontage on Vista Del Mar Avenue, and a shared driveway will extend across Lot 9 to provide access to the new residence. The Vista Del Mar, you can see on the bottom of the screen here, this is the existing L-shaped residence. Here is the garage to be demolished to make room for the new shared driveway. This is the site of the new garage. The shared driveway would extend along the lot, and here is the approved new single-family residence. The new residence on the rear lot would be 1,220 square feet. Slide 5 provides a closer view of the project site. If you can see, here's the existing L-shaped residence. This is the garage to be demolished. Here is the driveway that would extend across the lot, and this is the site of the new single-family residence. Slide 6 shows the project site in relation to the shoreline and surrounding residential development. As you can see, this is a fairly well-developed area, and the project site is away from the shoreline, closer to Shell Beach Road and Highway 101. Slide 7 is an artist rendering of the new residence. And slide 8 provides a view from Vista Del Mar Avenue. From this perspective, you can get a sense for how the project would fit with the surrounding development. The existing residence is here. The new garage is here. This is the shared driveway. And the new residence, you can see the roof and the side of the building back. You can see that the new residence would visually blend with the surrounding development. Slide 9 provides a view from Google Street View. Here is the existing residence, the project site, and this is the cypress tree that's in the front of the yard. Slide 10 provides an elevation view of the new residence. As you can see, the residence has a well-articulated facade and a small-scale character. The appellants raised three main contentions. First, that the approved development would have adverse impacts on community character and visual resources. Second, that the approved development would have adverse impacts on traffic and public parking. And third, that they believe Lot 20 was not legally created. Staff is recommending that the commission find that the appeals do not raise a substantial issue. The project represents a small-scale addition to an existing developed residential area and does not raise any significant coastal resource concerns. In terms of visual and community character issues, the project would not adversely impact any public views to or along the shoreline, and it would be within the zoning district's height limit. In addition, as you can see from this photo, there are other buildings nearby of similar height, and the new residence would not be oversized in relation to surrounding development. The LCP goes into detail about the appropriate scale of buildings in this planning area, indicating that new development should be designed to reflect the small-scale image of Shell Beach rather than large monolithic buildings. As you've seen in the photos, the renderings, and the site plans, it is clear that the project has been designed to reflect this small-scale character. In addition, the commission specifically required the city to provide for guest houses in this neighborhood when it certified amendments to the city's second dwelling unit ordinance in 2006. The new residence is small in scale, located behind the existing residence on Vista Del Mar Avenue, and would appear very similar to a small guest house, consistent with the commission's direction. In terms of public access, the project is located in a developed residential neighborhood with few visitor-serving amenities. At this location, potential public access impacts would be related to parking availability and traffic congestion. But in this case, the on-site parking required by the LCP has been provided, and the local roads have capacity to accommodate the small amount of additional traffic the project will create. Therefore, the project will not have any significant impacts on public access. And finally, as described in detail in the written staff report, although there are uncertainties about the legality of the lot, the uncertainties did not, in this particular case, raise a substantial issue because the approved development would not cause any coastal resource impacts. The development is small in scale and located on an infill parcel in an existing developed residential subdivision that allows for guest houses of a similar size and scale as the approved single-family residence. This project does not cause any impacts of regional or statewide concern. Staff recommends that the commission find that the appeal contentions do not raise a substantial issue of conformance with the LCP, and the recommended motion is on the first page of the staff report. That concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you. Are there any ex-party communications to declare, starting on my right, Commissioner Reese? Any ex-party communications?
Yeah. None.
Anyone? None. Okay, with that, I'll open the public hearing. This is a question of substantial issue, and I will call the appellants up first. Normally, we give 3 minutes per side, but I'm going to allow it 2 minutes per. We have two speakers, two appellants who are here. I'm going to give each of you 2 minutes. If Edward Pollard would come up first, and if you would state your name for the record, and then you have 2 minutes.
Members of the Commission, my name is Edward Pollard. I live at 235 Terrace Avenue, Pismo Beach. I am, this matter pertains to parcel map lots, which I created in 1972. And this matter involves more than just this one lot. It pertains to the use of all of these parcel map lots. In 1971, I did a 30-lot subdivision around the Shell Beach Elementary School that met all the requirements of city ordinances and the Subdivision Map Act, and had curb gutter sidewalk, underground utilities, lot size, and everything was met. And later, this parcel came available, which was this parcel map that I'm speaking of, and we approached the city with the idea that we'd divide it into parcels to be added to existing lots. No new individual separate lots no new separate home sites were proposed, and none were approved. None of these parcel map lots had any of the requirements of the Subdivision Map Act, such as public streets, utilities, lot size, and so forth. All of those things were never met, and the city did not approve separate standalone home sites at that time. These lots are developable. They are legal lots. Everyone agrees the intent was to create added depth to existing lots. Everyone agrees to that. I have correspondence from the city stating that. And everyone agrees that these lots are legal. They've been added or are developed in connection with the frontage lots over the past 38 years. And the city has never raised an objection or asked, except in one instance where a person had wanted to build something over the line. They asked for merging, but they never at the time asked for merging of these lots when they were created.
Could you wind up, please?
Yes. So this pertains to the most important aspect of this is that if these lots are separately sold and developed separately, that it will create a new subdivision between our two streets, which will be very substandard to the neighborhood.
Thank you.
And will not be in compliance with the land use element of the local coastal
Thank
plan.
You, but you're well over your time. Is the clock, apparently the clock is not working. Is the clock working? No. Okay. I wasn't aware of that, sorry. Thank you. Janet George, you also have 2 minutes, but we'll try to get this clock working. I think that was the problem that was...
Can I defer my time to Mr. Pollard?
Yes, you may.
Okay.
I will allow you to take another 2 minutes. Just finish up, Mr. Pollard.
Thank you very much.
As quickly as you can. Okay.
As I say, the important aspect of this is whether these lots should be developed independently as separate standalone home sites. They never met any of the requirements of the Subdivision Map Act or any of the city ordinances at the time, which are clear. We have clear evidence of what those were. And if you approve this project, it will set a precedent that there'll be six or seven other lots right down the line which will want to do the same thing. These lots will then be advertised and sold off separately and will, in effect, be tantamount to creating a very substandard development in our neighborhood, which will never have met the requirements of any of the ordinances for new lots. And I ask that you defer a decision on this matter until we can have a chance to sit down with staff and discuss all these things, or the legal aspects of these lots as independent lots for independent development can be analyzed and discussed. The staff reporter never called us to check on our main complaints on this matter, but they basically embraced everything that the city told them. And so what the city and contained in her own report, this what the city related to the staff reporter was incomplete, and some of it was erroneous. I ask that you look at the map that we provided you of the parcel map and ask yourself one question: are those lots suitable for separate standalone home sites according to your local coastal plan? Your local coastal plan, as my understanding, needs to follow the Subdivision Map Act, and rules of subdivision are set up for regulation of creation of independent lots, separate standalone home sites.
Thank you. Jordan Larson. Four minutes, please.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jordan Larson, and I am the applicant of the approved project. And just overall, I would like to ask you to support the commission staff in their position that there is no substantial issue in the grounds of this appeal. There's quite a bit of speculation regarding the legality of this lot, but one of the things that it comes down to is that it's speculated upon this resolution 446 from 1959. I'd just like to point out that that is a resolution rather than an ordinance. The active ordinance at the time was from the zoning code of 1963. And just to briefly quote the Subdivision Map Act, section 66411, quote, each local agency shall by ordinance regulate and control the subdivisions. So really, even if 446, this 1959 resolution, was fully in effect, which is even questionable, it was only a set of guidelines, not the zoning code itself. But so in contrast to this, the speculation there that the subdivision was not in compliance with the SMA, there's a lot of proof, legal documentation, and I'll just list a few of them, that prove that this is a legal lot, that this is a developable lot. One of the major ones that wasn't mentioned in the staff report was section 66412B of the Subdivision Map Act, which rules that any parcel created prior to March 4th, 1972, and that has been given a certificate of compliance, which ours has been conclusively presumed to have been lawfully created, and our lot follows these requirements fully. Finally, just like to respectfully ask you to please support commission staff when they point out that the lot legality question is not critical for the commission in this case. In fact, it would, if the commission makes a ruling finding that our lot is not part of a legal subdivision, it would open up a can of worms that benefits no one. And would essentially be a taking value from these legally purchased lots, property from all of the owners in this entire subdivision. It would nullify the ownership of parcels that have been bought and sold separately for the last 40 years. Commission staff has also done an excellent job of exhibiting how our project would have no impact whatsoever on coastal resources, sets no precedential issues for the commission, raises no statewide problems, and is in fact beneficial toward the goals of the commission by creating infill and affordable housing in the middle of an already developed residential area well away from the coast. I ask you again to follow the recommendations of commission staff and support our project and find no substantial issue with the appeal. Thank you.
With that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff. Any additional comments, staff?
Yeah, in terms of the lot legality issue, again, staff acknowledges that there are uncertainties here, but what we're concerned about is whether the development itself raises a substantial issue of conformance with the LCP. And in this case, there are the development does not have the potential to create any significant impacts on coastal resources. And there are no restrictions, any types of deed restrictions recorded against this property. In terms of the development potential of the remaining lots in this unusual subdivision, it's unclear how many additional lots could be developed in this way, maybe a handful. But again, this is an existing developed area. The zoning restrictions have height requirements, and so we don't see that that potential would create significant impact.
Ms. Melton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to add to what Ms. Cavallari already stated, the issue is not here whether or not the commission could determine whether there was lot legality. If staff thought that there were coastal resource issues here, it would have recommended a different finding, and the lot legality would have been part of that. However, what staff is recommending here is based on the fact that it doesn't find that the coastal resources are implicated. Staff does not believe that the applicant is correct about its taking allegation, and if the commission were to decide that there was evidence of coastal resource issues, there would not be a taking based on the lot legality. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Reese?
Yes, at this point, I'm not clear whether you're looking for a motion or whether I can make some comments.
If you're interested in making the motion, I would suggest you make the motion first and then address your motion. If you want to just make comments and then wait for a motion, that would be fine, too. That's up to you. I mean, we can go back to you for the motion after you've made your comments. I'll go to somebody else, and then we can go back to you. If you'd like to do it that way, that'll be fine.
Okay. I'd like to make some comments because I do agree with the appellants in a lot of the areas. And I believe there's many flaws with this project on the local level as to the lot legality, the lack of a variance, and parking issues that will have a cumulative effect on the city of Pismo Beach. But I also do understand where the staff is coming from in terms of coastal resources. But I think there are many issues that maybe on our local level we did not recognize that we should have at that point in time. Those are the comments I have at this point.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Commissioner Sanchez, and then if you want to, I'll go back to you for the motion if that's what you want to do, or I'll go to other commissioners. Commissioner Sanchez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I respectfully disagree with staff on this. I do believe that lot legality is a threshold that needs to be met and addressed. Either we are going to require that the lot legality issues be resolved as part of the review or action or not. Staff did discuss in the staff report that lot legality that there is a lot legality issue and admits that it is a problem and dismisses it as insignificant. It actually states in part that it would constitute substantial issue. That is what is before us, a substantial issue. On this, I would be not in agreement with staff report and would be voting to find substantial issue. So whatever the motion is, I believe the motion is worded in such a way that it does not present a substantial issue, and if that motion is made, I would be voting no, so that would find substantial issue. That would bring this back to for a full hearing. Thank you.
Commissioner Secord, and then I'll go back to
the Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand what Commissioner Sanchez has said, and I understand what the appellant has said, but I believe that the staff report is accurate, and that this is a local issue and should be dealt with on the local jurisdiction. I don't believe it's, it is a substantial issue for the coastal staff or for the Coastal Commission, and feel that it should be dealt with there.
Commissioner Reese, did you want to make a motion, or do you still want to continue to wait? Okay, I just have a question. Do you want to make a motion, or shall I? I have a question of staff. I'm not familiar with the Pismo Beach LCP, and is there anything in the Pismo Beach LCP that deals with the requirement for adequate infrastructure for development? Because clearly, from the statements that were made, the infrastructure here, particularly utilities, is not adequate. So I didn't know that that could be an issue, whether or not that is.
Well, yes, Madam Chair. Sure, the LCP includes policies to implement 30250 adequacy of infrastructure. That was not one of the appeal contentions in this case, so it was not specifically evaluated.
Okay, so that was not an appeal contention. That would be an issue for the commission, but and that would be my concern, because you have a cumulative impact with whether or not the infrastructure was adequate, and the applicant did not talk about inadequacy of infrastructure, because he mentioned that when he spoke. Did he not mention in his appeal anything about utilities, for instance, or roads?
We're reviewing that specific question right now. Our conclusion on the merits of that question are that there weren't substantial issues raised with respect to the capacity of the roads or water or sewer.
All right. Thank you. Commissioner Reese, I'm going to return to you again. Oh, Commissioner Bloom.
I move that the commission determine and resolve that appeal number A3PSB 10032 does not present a substantial issue with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed under the Coastal Act Section 30603 regarding consistency with the local certified local coastal program and or the public access policies of the Coastal Act, and recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Bloom, seconded by Commissioner Secord. Would you like to address your motion?
Briefly, thank you. I understand the discomfort due to apparently the lack of issues that were addressed at the local level in this matter, but the fundamental issue for us is whether or not coastal resources are involved, and I haven't heard evidence, as staff has reported to us, I also have not heard evidence that coastal resources were and are in fact involved, and that's why I'm making the motion and requesting a yes vote.
Any other comments? Commissioner Madam Sanchez?
Thank you. I just want to say one more thing. I do feel strongly that there is a precedential nature here in the cumulative impacts, not just on this project and this area, but on other projects. I'm thinking about Samoa and potential lot legality issues there, and how this kind of a decision will impact that kind of a decision. So I'm still going to urge a no vote on this. Thank you.
Mr. Lester?
Yes, just to clarify, I believe he did mention these questions in his initial appeal, so it's a valid contention. Nonetheless, we still think there's no substantial issue raised by it.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Is there a need for a roll call? Yes, would you please call the roll? The maker of the motion is recommending a yes vote, which would be the finding of no substantial issue. If you vote no, it's a finding of substantial issue.
Commissioner Bloom.
Yes.
Pardon me. Bloom, yes.
Yes.
Choked him up.
Commissioner Secord.
Yes.
Secord, yes. Commissioner Mercurimi. Mercurimi, no. Commissioner Neely.
Yes.
Neely, yes. Commissioner Reese.
No.
Reese, no. Commissioner Sanchez?
No.
Sanchez, no. Schellenberger? Schellenberger, yes. Stone? Stone, no. Chair Juan?
No.
Vote is 4-5.
Vote's a no.
Oh, it's a no.
SI is found.
The commission found substantial issue.
The commission has found, thank you, the commission has found substantial issue. And this will come back to us at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That would bring us to items C, D, and E, 8 C, D, and E, which are being presented in a consolidated staff presentation, and also you have a consolidated staff recommendation in your packet. And to make the presentation, I would like to hand the microphone over to Susan Craig.
Good morning, Commissioners. Items 8A, 8B, and 8C are the de novo reviews for the development of three single-family residences on the bluff above Hidden Beach and Aptos in Santa Cruz County. In July of this year, the Commission found that the projects raised a substantial issue with the Santa Cruz County LCP with respect to geological hazards and visual impacts and took jurisdiction over the coastal development permits for the projects. Because the property involved is in one contiguous location, and also because each of the proposed residences shares similar issues and the applications are best understood if evaluated jointly, the review of the projects is combined in one staff report and in one public hearing. Slide number 2 shows that the project site is located on an undeveloped blufftop located just down coast from the end of Bayview Drive in Aptos. The blufftop area overlooks Hidden Beach and slopes down into a coastal arroyo adjacent to the property. Hidden Beach County Park is located just down coast of the project sites. The park includes a blufftop coastal overlook and a heavily used public access path that connects to the sand at Hidden Beach. A second publicly used path extends along the bluff on the upcoast side of the arroyo, extending from the sand at Hidden Beach inland to Hidden Beach Way. The project site is located between two distinct residential areas. Slide 3 shows the upcoast Beach Drive residential area seen here on the sand and the Bayview Drive residential area seen here on the blufftop. The project site is located directly adjacent to this last house on the blufftop on the right. Slide 4 shows the development located directly downcoast from the project site, which includes a terraced residential area that extends above the beach and inland of the Via Gaviota seawall. Slide 5 shows the project site again. The undeveloped bluff area at the project site provides a natural landform respite from the more urban upcoast and downcoast developments that were seen in the previous two slides. The applicant proposes to construct three two-story single-family residences and associated improvements on the three contiguous undeveloped blufftop lots in this area. Slide 6 shows the configuration of the lots and the footprints of the proposed houses. Lots 2 and 3 are ocean-facing lots, and lot 1 is located in a more inland location. The proposed residences would range in size from 3,207 square feet to 5,547 square feet and would be located within an LCP-mapped scenic resource area. Shared drainage improvements are proposed, with a drainage line to be bored through the coastal bluff into a rock dissipator to be constructed in the arroyo. Slide 7 shows the southern ocean-facing elevation of the proposed house on lot 2, which is the upcoast blufftop lot. The proposed house on lot 2 would be 3,721 square feet. Slide 8 shows the southern ocean-facing elevation on lot 3, which is the downcoast blufftop lot. The proposed house on lot 3 would be 5,547 square feet. Slide 9 shows the southern elevation of the proposed house on lot 1, which is the lot located inland of the blufftop. The proposed house on lot 1 would be 3,207 square feet. The standard of review for the proposed projects is the certified Santa Cruz County LCP and the Public Access and Recreation Policies of the Coastal Act. Staff recommends that the commission deny coastal permits for the proposed developments on lots 2 and 3. Staff recommends that the commission approve a coastal permit for the proposed development on lot 1, which is the most inland lot. The Santa Cruz County LCP requires that risks be minimized and long-term stability and structural integrity be provided, and that development be sited, designed, and built to allow for natural shoreline processes to occur. All of this is required to be accomplished without the benefit of protective devices or other shoreline-altering construction. The LCP also requires that a coastal bluff building site be stable for a minimum of 100 years in its pre-development application condition, and that any development on it be set back an adequate distance to provide stability for the development's lifetime and at least 100 years. The project sites are located on top of an actively eroding bluff. The applicant's geotechnical representatives have established ocean-facing blufftop setbacks in the range of about 28 to 32 feet for the residences that are proposed on lots 2 and 3. The Commission's staff geologist, Dr. Mark Johnson, has analyzed the proposed project's setbacks in terms of applicable coastal hazards, including potential future sea level rise, coastal bluff retreat, and slope stability, and does not agree that the applicant's coastal blufftop setbacks are adequate. Dr. Johnson will now discuss the results of his analysis with respect to the proposed projects.
Thank you, Susan. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Well, I'd like to first to give you an overview of the subject parcels from a geologic perspective. If I could have the PowerPoint. Okay, thank you. This is slide A, and as Susan indicated, we are dealing with three parcels, two fronting on the coastal bluff, and one of which also fronts on a riverine or arroyo bluff, and one solely fronting on the river bluff. The geologic features to note here include the Parisima Formation bedrock, which is overlain by much younger fluvial and marine terrace deposits. Topographically, the site is characterized by a wide sandy beach, which tends to keep wave forces away from the bluff except during storms, and the presence of cones of slumped bluff material, which I'll refer to as colluvial wedges. Slide B indicates that nonetheless, the mid and upper bluff is quite steep in places, nearly vertical in places, and composed of relatively weak materials, especially the upper bluff and terrace deposits. Slide C. In addition to the coastal bluff, lots 1 and 2 are bounded by a coastal canyon or arroyo and subject to erosion from that side as well during flood events. This is slide D. The applicant's consultants maintained that because of the wide sandy beach fronting the parcels, they are very rarely subject to marine forces. In fact, the 2009 Zinn Geology Report states that, quote, we are aware of only one coastal storm event in the last 70 years that has touched the colluvial wedge, end quote, that being in January of 1983. I'll discuss the significance of this observation in estimating future bluff retreat in a moment, but I do want to point out that this observation on the part of the applicant's consultants is incorrect. Staff has been able to document that the base of the bluff has been attacked by storm waves during the winters of 1994-95, 2001, 2010, and it is likely that other episodes have gone unobserved or reported. This is a photo of waves impacting the bluff at the site that I took in January of 2001. As is commonly the case, the wave event was joined by a rainfall event, and fluvial erosion of the northeastern side of the properties was occurring at the same time. Slide E. Just last January, I also observed the aftermath of a storm event at this site. Note the kelp washed up against the base of the bluff, clearly indicating that the sea was impacting the base of the bluff at the site. Evidence that these were not just gentle lapping waves can be seen by the large debris that was transported and deposited high on the beach, such as the log shown here. And a large propane tank washed up high on the beach. This is slide F. Slide G. This storm clearly caused erosion of the bedrock at the base of the bluff. Note that the block rock fall here, these rocks have fallen on top of the rack on the beach. This is slide H. Subaerial erosion of the upper bluff is also ongoing. This retaining wall was built on the adjacent property just up coast, apparently in the early 1990s, and as you can see from the exposed concrete here, the bluff below it has eroded at least 2 feet vertically in no more than 20 years. This is slide I. The applicant's geologist, Eric Zinn, reported in 2006 that the top of the coastal bluff at the project site has eroded at an average rate of between 0.09 and 0.30 feet per year since 1928, based on the analysis of aerial photographs. He also reported a retreat rate of 0.05 feet per year for the arroyo-facing bluff. Dr. Jerry Weber, consultant to the applicant, has provided photographic evidence that portions of the bluff have seen little change over intervals ranging from 2 to 29 years. None of these lengths of observation are sufficient to establish long-term bluff retreat rates, however. The applicant's consultants emphasized the lack of marine erosion at the base of the bluff. Such erosion is not the only concern here, however. The top of the bluff is more of interest since that erosion there will more quickly impact development, and the oversteepened mid and upper bluff are unequivocally continuing to erode. Mr. Zinn's value for the coastal bluff retreat are considerably lower than the published local values. In Living with the Changing California Coast, Griggs et al. Summarized the results of numerous studies published over the past several decades evaluating coastal erosion at just these cliffs. Within several hundred feet north and south of the subject site, they report bluff retreat rates of 5 and 7 inches, respectively, or about half a foot a year. These authors also mapped the subject site as an area at high risk for hazard areas. They also note numerous slope failures to the north and south, as well as damages to the homes on the beach due to these slope failures, as well as storm waves. They also note that in this area, there were numerous slope failures during the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake, damaging homes and requiring the construction of retaining walls. In the U.S. Geological Survey's National Assessment of Shoreline Change, which evaluated bluff retreat between 1932 and 1998 at 50-meter intervals along this section of coast, Happy and Reed reported long-term erosion rates of 20 to 30 centimeters, or again, about half a foot per year. Slide J. But what you are tasked to evaluate is not what the historic bluff retreat rate at the site has been, but what it will be in the future. The LCP requires that the development be stable for 100 years. The historic bluff retreat rate, either the low values reported by the applicant's geologists or the higher values reported by independent studies, reflect in part the nature of the site. The wide sandy beach keeps all but storm waves away from the bluff. Non-marine erosion has resulted in buttressing colluvial wedges. Both of these effects have protected this site in the past. But to what extent will these characteristics protect the site in the future? This is slide K. Of greatest concern is continued and accelerated sea level rise. This morning you heard a brief report of staff efforts to incorporate best information on sea level rise into our recommendations to you. Sea level rise is especially important in this case because as sea level rises, the bluffs that were rarely exposed to marine erosion in the past will be exposed to marine erosion for greater lengths of time with every tidal cycle. The wide beach will be flooded and eroded, the colluvial wedges will be subject to wave attack and eroded, and the bedrock making up the base of the bluff will also be eroded, destabilizing the upper bluff. Continued and accelerated global sea level rise is essentially undisputed in the scientific community. Now, the only question is what will be the rate of the sea level rise in the future. The applicant's consultants have opined on reasonable values to assume for various types of development. They concluded that applications for development such as single family residences should apply a lower value of sea level rise than critical infrastructure. This is not the approach recommended by staff. While staff agrees that critical infrastructure should be held to a higher standard than minor development, that higher standard should not mean a reinterpretation of what is our best estimate of future sea level rise. As you know, assessing future sea level rise is difficult at best. The top diagram here is perhaps the best current estimate, well respected in the scientific community, and is based solely on an empirical correlation of past sea level rise and global average air temperature. The future predictions are based on various model estimates of future global average air temperatures, which are much more precise than model estimates of sea level rise itself. The table at the lower left provides the estimates of future sea level rise recommended for use by the State Natural Resources Agency in its recently released draft report. These estimates are considered interim while we await a more comprehensive study specifically requested by the state, now being undertaken by the National Academy of Science. On this point, I'd like to note that Mr. Zinn takes issue with the characterization of some of his work for the staff report. Specifically, after reviewing Mr. Zinn's initial reports, it was clear to me that he had not adequately taken into account future sea level rise and asked that he supplement his analysis to include consideration of the ways that sea level rise could lead to increased erosion at this location. Mr. Zinn did this, and the remarks in the staff report that he adjusted his estimate of the future bluff retreat to 1 to 2 feet of potential retreat at the base of the bluff per year are observations in relation to Mr. Zinn's later analysis intended to better account for sea level rise. Mr. Zinn feels his work has been mischaracterized in this respect. For the record, the references to Mr. Zinn's work on pages 16 and 17 of the staff report are references to the changes in potential rates that he identifies as possible, although not in his view likely, in light of continued sea level rise. This is slide L. In fact, there currently does not exist a consensus methodology for applying a particular rate of sea level rise to estimates of future coastal bluff retreat rates. Until a consensus methodology emerges, staff continues to recommend the approach that we base predicted future bluff retreat rate on historical bluff retreat rates, and that these rates should be as site-specific as possible, but must be evaluated with what is known about local and regional historical trends. Rather than applying a minimum or average temporal or spatial historic rate, we recommend applying the maximum historic long-term rate to account for likely increases in the rate due to sea level rise. Applying this approach, the best estimate of future bluff retreat rate at this site is the maximum long-term rate observed nearby, as reported by the USGS National Shoreline Change Assessment of 2007, and that's about 30 centimeters, or 0.98 feet per year. That is, over the 100-year evaluation period required by the LCP, staff estimates that there will be approximately 98 feet of retreat at the top of the bluff. This is slide M. Arriving at an estimated future bluff retreat rate is only part of the analysis required by the Coastal Act and the Santa Cruz County LCP to assure stability for the life of the development. Stability against landsliding, for example, is routinely evaluated through a quantitative analysis of the factor of safety against movement. Essentially, the forces tending to resist movement, basically the strength of the slope materials, are divided by the forces tending to drive movement, essentially the weight of the slope materials. If that quotient is equal to unity, a failure is imminent. A quotient less than unity is theoretically impossible, as the slope would already have failed. Increasingly high values, factors of safety, give increasing confidence of stability. The industry standard for new development is a factor of safety of 1.5. So to comply with the LCP, a factor of safety equal to 1.5 must be maintained for 100 years given ongoing bluff retreat. The first step is to evaluate the factor of safety today. I'll turn first to the coastal bluff side of the subject parcels. The original analysis by the applicant's consultant assumed a failure mechanism and calculated a very high factor of safety against this type of failure. This is not a typical methodology used for addressing the factor of safety. More commonly, a computer is used to perform a number of analyses and seek out the failure surface with the minimum factor of safety, and that is taken as the most likely failure mechanism. I asked the applicant's consultant to perform this type of analysis. Slide N. Even before this analysis was completed, nature showed that the bluff did not have the calculated high factor of safety. In February of 2009, there was a slump of the upper bluff on Lot 3, demonstrating that the factor of safety of the site was, at least under conditions prevailing at that time, 1.0 or less. Slide O. The results of the analysis on an adjacent parcel with very similar characteristics in bluff geometry demonstrate that the factor of safety for a circular failure of the upper bluff is only 1.3. Further analysis showed that to achieve a factor of safety of 1.5, development must be sited 18 feet inland of the bluff edge. The much less steep arroyo-facing slope has a much higher factor of safety, and no setback is necessary to achieve a 1.5 factor of safety there. This is slide P. Finally, using these data, we can arrive at a setback that is consistent with the LCP. To assure stability today, we need to set development back 18 feet. To assure stability in 2110, we must add 98 feet to that setback for a total of 116 feet. This approach has been the methodology that staff has used in recommending setbacks for new development for at least the last decade and has been presented to the community at large in public workshops, presentations, publications, and in numerous commission findings. The applicant's consultant, Mr. Zinn, has used a very different approach to evaluate the amount of time that their proposed setback with the proposed setback will be safe from erosion. I understand that the applicant intends to present this approach to you in the public hearing, and when you return to staff, I'll be happy to comment on that approach and to answer any of your questions. Slide Q. This is what the staff's recommended setback looks like on the ground. Shown in red is the setback recommended by the applicant's geologist. Shown in green is the staff recommended setback. Note that the 25-foot setback recommended by both the applicant's geologist and staff applies only to Lot 1. Slide R. Finally, I would just like to close with what may be the future of sea level rise, of relating sea level rise to the evaluation of site stability. I said previously that there is no consensus methodology for relating future sea level rise to future bluff retreat rates. Fortunately, that situation is changing. In 2009, the California Energy Commission, in its role as lead agency on the California Climate Action Team, commissioned a study by the Pacific Institute to do, among other things, just that. The Pacific Institute, in turn, commissioned Phil Williams and Associates for this part of the task, and they mapped erosion high hazard zones for the year 2100 for northern and central coastal California, based quantitatively on future sea level rise estimates adopted by the Climate Action Team and on the USGS's estimates of historic erosion rates. Many of you were present at a workshop in Oxnard that presented these results to the Commission in April of 2009. Interestingly, the erosion high hazard zone, the area seaward of the yellow line, coincides very well with staff's recommended setback on the subject parcels. And with that, I'll return the staff presentation to Susan.
I'd like to go back to the first presentation, slide 10. Based on the 116-foot coastal blufftop setback that Dr. Johnson has determined is necessary to provide stability for at least 100 years, the proposed developments on lots 2 and 3 cannot be found consistent with the Santa Cruz County LCP. The proposed development on lot 1 is located about 120 feet from the edge of the coastal blufftop, and thus the proposed development on this parcel can be found consistent with the LCP in terms of coastal hazards. The undeveloped lots proposed for development are located within an LCP-mapped scenic resource area. The LCP has multiple provisions that require development to be sited and designed to ensure protection of significant visual resources, including views within mapped scenic resource areas. As previously mentioned, the project site is undeveloped and provides a respite from the urban development located upcoast and downcoast of the project site, much of which has shoreline armoring. Slide 11 shows the project site as seen from the overlook area on the public access path that is located on the other side of the arroyo. The proposed development on lots 3 and 2 would be located in this general area and would be prominent in the foreground of views as seen from the overlook area. Slide 12 shows the project site from the lower part of the public path. Again, development on lots 2 and 3 would be prominently seen from this significantly used public path. Lot 1 would be located more inland in the area, kind of between these two houses, and would not be as visible from the path. Slide 13 shows that the proposed developments on lots 2 and 3 would also be prominently seen from Hidden Beach itself, whereas Lot 1 would be out of view from this angle. Slide 14 shows the location of Lot 1 with respect to the coastal bluff and the public overlook and path. The proposed development on Lot 1 is located about 120 feet inland from the edge of the coastal bluff and is the closest to Bayview Drive and thus is not highly visible from the overlook or the public access path or the beach. Appropriately sited and designed development on Lot 1 would be integrated into the existing residentially built environment and would be located a substantial distance away from the coastal bluff edge.
For these reasons, the proposed development on Lot 1 can be found consistent with the LCP's visual resource policies. However, given the topography and the location of the project sites and the size and the scale of the proposed residential developments on Lots 2 and 3, the proposed projects on these lots will have a highly detrimental impact on the natural setting and viewshed as seen from the beach and from the overlook area and the public access trail. Perhaps most critically, the overlook view toward the beach and ocean would be substantially adversely impacted by residential development on Lots 2 and 3. As such, in addition to being inconsistent with the LCP with respect to coastal hazards, the proposed developments on Lots 2 and 3 are inconsistent with the LCP's visual resource policies, including those that specifically provide protection to map scenic resource areas and views from beaches and parks. As mentioned previously, the proposed drainage plan includes shared drainage improvements with a drainage line to be bored through the bluff that would empty out into a rock dissipator that would be constructed in the adjacent arroyo on property not owned by the applicant. However, the arroyo area is subject to an easement offer, which requires that this area be protected as public open space and which prohibits the installation of structures such as the drainage structures proposed. Fortunately, the elimination of residential development on Lots 2 and 3 will allow for all drainage from Lot 1 to be handled on site, thus eliminating the need for a drainage line extending to the arroyo. As stated earlier, development on Lots 2 and 3 cannot be found consistent with the LCP due to inadequate coastal bluff setbacks and visual impacts. Development on Lot 1, however, can be found consistent with the LCP if special conditions are imposed. Regarding the approvable residential development on Lot 1, staff recommends special conditions to require 1. Revised plans showing residential development on Lot 1 only. As shown in slide 15, an open space conservation easement over the required geologic setback areas. 3. Appropriate landscaping to ensure that the viewshed is not adversely impacted. 4. Drainage components located outside of the arroyo on the applicant's property. 5. A prohibition on the construction of any future shoreline protective devices to protect the approved residence over its lifetime. 6. That the applicant and all successors in interest assume all risks for development in an area subject to coastal hazards. And 7. Recordation of a deed restriction to ensure that the applicant and all successors in interest clearly understand the terms and conditions of this permit as they apply to this property. In conclusion, staff believes that an approval for one residence on Lot 1 most appropriately addresses the significant coastal hazard and view issues consistent with the LCP. The applicant is thereby afforded residential development and, as modified by these special conditions, including elimination of 2 of the 3 proposed residences, the approved portion of the project can be found consistent with the requirements of the certified Santa Cruz County LCP and the public access and recreation policies of the Coastal Act. Staff recommends that the Commission approve the proposed development on Lot 1 as conditioned. The motions and resolutions to act on this recommendation are found on pages 5 to 6 of the staff report. And this concludes staff's presentation on items 8A through 8C.
Thank you. Any ex parte communications to report, starting on my left, Commissioner Secord?
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's an ex parte on file. It was done approximately the 10th of December. It was a telephone conversation regarding the project, the bluff retreat, the setback, the regional nature of some of the determination of bluff retreat versus the site-specific information. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Neely?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My ex partes are on file.
Commissioner Stone?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My ex partes are on file also.
Anyone else? Commissioner Schallenberger?
thank you, Madam Chair. On December 6th at about 4 o'clock, I had a telephone conversation with Susan McCabe and Ann Lemker. They said that that there were 3 legal lots in Santa Cruz County and that Frank did the lot, I had already done a lot line adjustment from 4 down to 3. That staff was recommending denial of 2 lots and approval of 1. Staff was basing their denial on geological setback and visual issues. Their geologists had come up with a 25 to 32 foot setback. However, Mark Johnson had reviewed USGS hazard maps and sea level rise and was recommending 121 foot setback, but since the lot was only 116 feet, on two of the lots, that was a problem. Staff is going to recommend or is recommending merger of three lots so that there would be an economic value to put one house on it. Frank had put them already into separate ownership, so the commission can't make him merge them. Staff has done a takings analysis and says there's not a takings because there is economic value if they're merged. The three lots directly below are the bunker house, which the Coastal Commission approved a few years ago, only going to have bluff toe erosion when the waves are really high, and that it's the staff says it's in an area called that it is in an area called scenic resource, and that the staff report erroneously says it's a special scenic resource, but it's just a scenic resource. That's it.
Commissioner Bloom.
Thank you. On December 13th, 2010, at 1:15 p.m. in Santa Monica, I spoke with Susan McCabe and had a conversation that was substantially similar to the one that Commissioner Schallenberger just related.
Any others? Commissioner Reese? None? Thank you. With that, I will open the public hearing and call up the applicant, Thomas Jameson. And you have three speaker slips in for yourself and your team. Can you tell me how much time you would need for your entire presentation?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Thomas Jameson. I represent the applicants. We have endeavored to limit our main presentation to 15 minutes.
That would be fine.
However, as the commission probably knows, every time we do it, it seems to go longer in the hearing. So what we would ask for is 20 minutes, Madam Chair. We do have three separate appeals here. And we would ask, we don't think we'll need much time for rebuttal, but we would ask for 3 minutes for rebuttal.
That's fine. I'll give you 20 minutes for your presentation and 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Thomas Jameson. I represent the applicants. I want to be clear on who the applicants are. It is Neil Frank individually, Arnold Land Company, a limited liability company, and Baltimore Land Company, a limited liability company. Mr. Frank owns Lot 1, and the two LLCs own Lots 2 and 3. What I would like to say initially, Madam Chair, we know that we face an uphill battle trying to convince you to go against the staff recommendation that essentially is recommending denial of two of the lots. We know that you face that battle as well, or that issue, uphill issue as well. We would like to say, though, that you know we're not here to criticize anybody or to make judgments about anybody. We know you like your staff, and we know you're proud of them. We like your staff, too. We disagree with them sometimes, but that's why we have meetings like this. What we do want, though, is to make sure that the commission has the correct facts in making its decision. Okay? We haven't heard anything new from Dr. Johnson. Our geologist, the issue of the day is geology, let's face it. And it's the setback. And our geologists are going to address that. What I would like to do, first of all, though, is let's get rid of Lot 1. The staff recommendation is for approval of Lot 1. It says that it's consistent with the Coastal Act. We would like you to approve, Mr. Frank would like you to approve Lot 1, however, without the conditions that require the merger of Lots 2 and 3. And frankly, that is because Mr. Frank doesn't want to own Lots 2 and 3 in a state of perpetual open space. It's only a liability as far as he's concerned. So we would like your approval of Lot 1, but just to be clear, it would be conditions 1A, 1C, 1D, to the extent they apply to Lots 2 and 3, Condition 2, Condition 3, and Condition 7, Mr. Frank would object to and would like to see those removed. Now, moving on to the first geology issue, I would like to introduce Dr. Jerry Weber, one of the applicant's consultants. Dr. Weber has extensive experience with Santa Cruz County coastline. He was the coastal geologist for the Santa Cruz County Planning and Environmental Health Department for 10 years. He has been a lecturer in various fields of geology at UC Santa Cruz for 20 years. And he's going to do a PowerPoint presentation, Madam Chair, and would like to call him to the lectern right now. And if you can help me limit Dr. Weber to like 5 minutes, I'd really appreciate it, Madam Chair.
My reputation precedes me. Thank you for the opportunity to present this. I have a series of slides here. And what I'm going to tell you very briefly is that this is a unique section of coastline. It is an area where you have an abandoned sea cliff, and that I can demonstrate without question that the area from New Brighton Beach to the Paro River has experienced no significant erosion for the last 153 years and probably longer. So that's where we're going with this. First, let's do some definitions. If you look here, this is an active sea cliff. An active sea cliff has a vertical cliff. It's got no talus pile or colluvial wedge at the bottom, and that's just what you see. Now, this is an example of an eroding sea cliff and soft sediment in Half Moon Bay. This is an active cliff. When a cliff is abandoned by the ocean for any variety of reasons, erosion begins to modify the cliff face. Initially, the erosion takes place very quickly, but as you go back in time, the erosion rate decreases logarithmically. So to say that you have an erosion rate of 2 feet per year at some point in the last 20 years, that means in the next 20 years it'll be significantly less than 2 feet per year. It has to be. There are numerous papers which have dealt with this over the last 25 to 30 years. We have an abandoned sea cliff along the coastline. You have a colluvial wedge built out. Here is the property right adjacent to the Frank property. And here is the Frank property. You have a colluvial wedge sticking out. You have a colluvial wedge in here. Occasionally this gets trimmed a little bit, but you have only minor changes in the last 27 years and actually in the last 40 years that I've been walking the coastline. So let's go on. This is the abandoned coastline. It goes from New Brighton to Pajaro River, and we have almost no erosion. Let's take a look. Here's the place I would like to go first is Sunset Beach because it is easy to see what's going on. Here are two photos 18 years apart. You can see essentially no erosional changes at the base of the cliff. Occasionally a little bit of this material is removed by high tides during big storms. So let's look at the two trees. Remember the two trees. 2001 aerial photograph. The two trees and the road coming down. 1953, the two trees and the road coming down. No erosion from 1953 to 2010. Let's look at 1928. Two trees and a road going down to the beach. Two trees and a road going down to the beach in 53. No erosion since 1928, 82 years. So that's the basis of what I'm going to be talking about. Hidden Beach, here's the subject parcel. Here's the subject parcel on the 1935 photograph. What you can see at the base of the cliff is a very nice colluvial wedge, vegetated. The upper part of the cliff face is bare. It's still eroding, and it erodes backward, getting slower every single year. Frank property is right here. If you look at the shape of this, what you see is that the coastline is essentially the same. It's essentially unchanged in that time period. Very small amounts of erosion occurring episodically. Here is a picture of Beach Drive. I got this from Gary Griggs at UCSC, who's a colleague and friend. And if you look at this, this is Beach Drive in the 1930s. Look at the size of the colluvial wedge. That colluvial wedge is not formed in a period of a few years. The fact that that exists indicates that that sea cliff has not experienced erosion in probably the last 150 to 200 years. And you can do that also. I'm not going to have time to do it, but I can show you using the 1853 shoreline map and the 1932 shoreline map that there's been no erosion at La Selva Beach for over 150 years, and also in the area of Hidden Beach. So here are the conclusions. We have no evidence of any significant erosion of the base of the actual sea cliff. All we see is erosion of the colluvial wedge. And this is certainly with the last 80 plus years and probably the past 157 years. The bluff retreat rate of approximately a third of a foot per year is agreed upon by myself, Gary Griggs, Eric Zinn, Rogers Johnson, and Joe Hanna. We've all reviewed the data, and we think that's an adequate and a correct approximation of what this cliff retreat rate is. The bluff retreat rate is going to be lower than that in the future. By definition, it cannot be higher at the top of the bluff. And I've done and looked at the sea level rise and the sea level curves, and based on the fact that you have elevated sea levels during El Niños and you have storm surges and you also have very, very high waves, and that's the only time you've seen erosion in this area, I would suggest that it'll be a minimum of 50 years and maybe as long as 60 years before you see any significant erosion occurring along this coastline. If you'd like to ask questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them. Thank you.
That'll conclude Dr. Weber's presentation. We'd have a PowerPoint, next PowerPoint, please. Pardon me? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Oh. Okay, I'm glad that Dr. Weber stuck to his time. What we have here, I want to discuss in general the issues now. As I've indicated, we haven't heard anything different from Dr. Johnson in what he's presented in his staff report. What he has said, and I think he would agree with this, is that, and this is from a paper that he did in 2003, and it says, well, let me set the scene. The scene has become between, are we going to do a regional broad erosion rate or are we going to do a site-specific erosion rate? We have very good data. We have extremely good data about this particular site and just up and down coast from it. But here, Dr. Johnson says, the commission then makes its decision on a case-by-case basis based upon the site-specific evidence related to the particular development proposal. Okay? Now, and I would like to point out that when Dr. Johnson was talking about erosion rates, he was talking about erosion rates north and south of this site, not this site. Next, he also cited Gary Griggs, Dr. Griggs, who I think your commission is familiar with. Here's what Dr. Griggs said about this particular piece of property, okay? Says there is broad agreement among the people who have worked in this area that the gently sloping bluffs in this area, as well as the broad fronting beach, provide good evidence that these bluffs have not been removed from wave attack for many years. There are photos which show that for as long as photos exist, that there has been little overall change in the position of the base of the bluff. If the base of the bluff doesn't erode, the top doesn't erode, okay? Then he says, regarding the citation that Dr. Johnson made, regarding the data taken from Griggs, Patch, and Savoy, those are general regional values and are not generally intended to be used for site-specific situations. That's what Dr. Griggs says about the data that the commission's geologist used. And here's what Dr. Griggs and his students found based on their own examination. And it says, and this was attached to his email. It says, for the southernmost 37 meters of bluff, including the parcels being analyzed, erosion rates from 1953 to 1994 averaged 0.33 feet per year. Okay, that's compared to what the commission's geologist has come up with, which is 0.98 feet per year, three times that. Now, what we did in preparation for this hearing, we prepared a database, okay, of 100 new developments in four areas, Seacliff Bluff, Rio del Mar Bluff, and I'm getting blocked by the dollar sign there. I don't know what that is. Seascape Beach Entries. Anyway, what the data bluff shows is that just since 2003, 11 of 15 homes have been approved with setbacks of 30 feet or less. That's approximately the setback that our geologists have come up with. Here are five developments that have very recently been approved that are very similar to Bayview. There are no seawalls. They're on a bluff. It's 250 Joffrey Lane, 301 15th Avenue. I'm going to run through these. 63 Joffrey Lane, 415 Coastview Road, 656 Bayview Drive. Now, point out, all of these required coastal development permits. Now, I don't know if they were appealed to the commission or not, but you can't do development in Santa Cruz County in these locations without a coastal development permit. So, and we have We have evidence as well that in this database with these houses, they couldn't have been approved without coastal development permits. We don't know if they were appealed to the commission, but certainly the commission had to be aware of them, okay? So it had the opportunity to review this. So we have trouble when we read in the staff report that this is the first time the commission, first time, okay, that the commission has had the opportunity to look at the true erosion rate on this bluff. I mean, the Coastal Act has been in effect since January 1, 1977, okay? So anyway, what we have then is, and this is just kind of a cute little scale here, the importance of using site-specific data. Everybody agrees, and that is Dr. Weber, Dr. Griggs, Eric Zinn, Joe Hanna, he's the county geologist for Santa Cruz, and Rogers Johnson, who is also a well-known Santa Cruz County geologist, and Dr. Johnson. Now, that ended up sideways. But here is the chart. Dr. Johnson showed it. Here's the chart from which he took his erosion rate for this area. Now, if you can tell me from this chart where the site-specific, where Hidden Beach is site-specific, where it is and what the erosion rate is, you're a lot better than I am, because I can't tell anything hardly from this chart. What the commission's geologist did was he interpolated that the rate was between 0.66 and 0.98 feet per year for this stretch of coastline. We don't know what this stretch is, but you can see here it varies tremendously. So it really depends on what you would take. So in conclusion, we have five geologists who have looked at the site-specific evidence for this site, and it's up coast, down coast, and they all agree, okay, based on the aerial photographs. To our knowledge, the commission's geologists did not look at this at the data, the aerial photographs. And that's no criticism of him. Maybe he didn't have time, whatever. It's just not applicable to this site. Now, going on to the scenic resource issue, this is the scenic resource area overlay from the Santa Cruz County LCP. And this green swath goes up and down the entire coast of Santa Cruz County, okay? And there's the proposed development. The attempt to make this, I think it's simply an overstatement, the attempt to make this particular site be extra special, okay? Is it visible from the path? Yes, there's no denying that. Is it different than other houses from various vantage points? And the answer is no. Now, here's from the database. Just since 2007, there have been 36 of 83 homes approved in the scenic resource area, okay? So, you know, this is not unusual. Here's the neighborhood. And to say, let me see if I can get, here's the applicant site. And to say that this is somehow isolated and so forth is a bit, I think it's misleading, because there are houses all around. This is how the layout of the lots was done. And actually, before a lot line adjustment, which was approved by Santa Cruz County, in which the commission was aware of, there were three lots fronting the bluff. And so this lot line adjustment was in part, I mean, one of the effects of the lot line adjustment, I'm not going to tell you it was done just for this, because that wouldn't be true, but one of the effects of the lot line adjustment is it reduced the bluff fronting lots from 3 to 2, okay? Now, here's the park. And you can't see, and it's a nice park. We walk there, but you can't see the site because of the blocking of the trees until you hit this point. And that's just the way it is. So there's no impact whatsoever from these houses on the park facilities up here. Now, this is the horizon. The claim is made while it's blocking views from the park and the park bench. That's the horizon, all right? That's taken from the park bench, I believe. But we'll show you again the view cone. Here we are. We're traveling down the coast. This is the view that you would see along this coastline. And this is starting at, I believe, Beach Drive. So you can see we've got all these houses on the bluff. We've got all these houses on the beach. Going there. We're going south. Then we get down here, and we're going, you know, still the houses on the beach, the houses on the, I mean, the bluff, and then we've got the beach, the houses on the beach end here, and here's the applicant's property right here, okay? And then we go down, and just here's the path, okay? And these are the houses that are just south of the applicant's property. So when we're talking about view shed, we've got this, okay? This is okay. This is okay. This is okay. Now, that's the sewage pump plant, treatment plant. But you're saying this is not okay? Because these are the houses on the applicant's property right here. How do they stand out? So it really depends on your vantage, a lot of your vantage point. Now, this is a view cone from the path, basically, and you can see it goes out. That's the out to the ocean and the beach. Okay, and there it is. That's the view. And there's no blocking. The houses aren't going to block the view to the ocean, okay? Next you have, this is the view cone looking directly at the houses. And this is a simulation of what the houses would look like with, you know, some amount of landscaping. Now, we can't say they're not visible, ladies and gentlemen. Again, that would not be telling the truth. But they can be. The views can be minimized. And that's what all of these LCP resource policies say, okay? It says have minimal impacts on the views. Require projects to be evaluated in the context of their unique environment. Regulate structure, height, setbacks, and design. Minimize disruption of landforms. Okay, open bees. You want to prohibit the placement except where allowed on existing parcels of record. The LCP policies specifically allow structures on parcels of record for resource reasons. You want to minimize the view, but that's it. And then again, down here it says screening and landscaping unsuitable to the site shall be used to soften the visual impact of the development in the view shed. Now, Santa Cruz County did all of this analysis. If you look at the staff report, they were really tough on this, okay? But I will point out to you that there nowhere in the Santa Cruz County LCP, and that's a standard conformity, does it say you can deny development because of its visibility. Nowhere. And that's just not the policy of the commission. The entire Big Sur LCP is premised on the fact that you cannot not compensate somebody for saying they can't build in a view shed. Now, on the, and I'm running out of time, very briefly, I'm closing up, Madam Chair. On the issue of the taking, okay, I'm not going to get into a great deal of detail on that. It would bore you anyway, but I just want to say this, that I was astounded when I saw the staff report, okay, and I'm the first to admit I am not the brightest light on the Christmas tree, okay?
Could you wind up, please?
Yes, I am. But I've been doing this for a long time, and I said, where did this come from? And I just want to point out this. Consider this. The staff report says that it will be a nuisance if you build this and if something is built within the 100-year setback, okay? A public nuisance. That's not the law. But consider the effect of that if you make that decision and set that precedent. You've created one heck of a problem for government all up and down the coast. Because if it's not set up, if it's not a 100-foot setback, it's a nuisance.
Thank you.
All
right. With that, I will call. It appears that I have four speaker slips. Since they have an order, I'm assuming that there's an order of a presentation, and this is a combined presentation. Would William, sort of an organized presentation, would William Comfort come forward? Can you tell me how much time you'll need for your organized presentation? You have to get on the microphone.
This one. Sorry. I would need 5 minutes for my presentation, and I don't know how long the others are.
All right, that's fine. Then you may have 5 minutes. There are four of you, so you can go.
But the others are independent.
All right, thank you.
Okay, can we have the, there we go, thank you. My name's Bill Comfort, I'm an appellant, and I'm appealing the proposed blufftop development at Hidden Beach. This is located between Seascape and Rio Del Mar and Aptos. This is, as the staff pointed out, a respite from many places, in many ways as a park. It is one of the few places where the sand meets the bluffs. Other places it doesn't. It's all meeting sea walls and what have you. Let's see. Is this the next? No. Okay. The button. Thank you. Oh. Up. Ah, thank you. There we go. The Hidden Beach Park, as was pointed out previously, is back here. But there is a long walkway that goes down, which is public, and it does, in fact, particularly in its higher elevations from the viewpoint, give good views of all of this property. The Hidden Beach is down here. The Arroyo is over here. Just for your reference, I have found logs, huge logs brought in by waves up in this arroyo. They are clear indicators that there have been huge waves that have come in, and they have impacted the bluffs, both the arroyo and the beach bluffs. That all proposed structures are nearly maximum possible floor height or floor area and height, with near minimum setbacks. A little bit more than 25 feet, but that's the minimum by Santa Cruz County law. These are slightly more. If these applications are approved, there will likely be 5 huge two-story houses on these bluffs. 2 have been withdrawn for now. The major issues: damage to the beach view shed and damage to the fragile bluffs. Views of the ocean and the Arroyo Bluffs from Hidden Beach would be dominated by 2 huge, leering, two-story structures with minimum setbacks. The third huge two-story structure would impair the ocean and bluff views from the public beach linking Hidden Beach Park. Now, it's unclear whether this is number 2 or number 3, and so I'm not sure which of those lots it is in this case, because the architect's drawings and pictures were not very specific. In any case, fragile bluffs, both ocean and arroyo, would be compromised. Significant sloughing on bluffs of adjacent property has occurred simply from overwatering. Wave, creek, runoff, erosion, and drainage are very important here. Waves impact the ocean and arroyo bluff bases now. Future sea level rise will increase bluff erosion rates. Major slippages on nearby parcels occurred during the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake. Here's some views from Hidden Beach. This is the top picture here, views from the ocean. Here is the slough that I spoke about. This is a blow-up of it down here in the lower corner. This slough was caused by overwatering. You'll notice how large it is. This is all just from the top of the cliff. Here's a view of the Arroyo Bluff, and this is parallel to the front side of the Ocean Bluff. So the Ocean Bluff is over here. Notice that this is much lower in height than the other part, so any houses out in this area would be exceedingly evident from any place on the beach. They are very, very much in the view shed. Finally, I'd like to ask the following for a mitigation of the damage to the beach and Arroyo Bluffs and the view shed. Increase the setbacks from the bluffs, which will reduce the overbearing dominance of the proposed structures, reduce the probability of the bluff damage, and it will also account for sea level rise in keeping with the governor's executive order. This is my last slide.
You have to wind up, please.
Okay, decrease viewshed impacts by reducing structure heights and carefully control runoff and surface water to minimize erosion. Finally, disallow future retaining walls for these parcels if the bluff threatens the structures.
Thank
move
you.
The structures.
Your time
Thank
is
you.
Up.
Thank you.
Faye Levinson.
Good morning.
Please tell me how much time you will need.
2 minutes.
Thank you.
Good morning. At this time, I would like to acknowledge and thank the Coastal Commission staff for their outstanding work on these projects. Their reports are thorough and conclusive and most appreciated. And I would like to thank the Coastal Commission for the continued stewardship of our coast. The projects under consideration have a substantial issue with respect to conformance with certified Santa Cruz County LCP and conformance with applicable LCP provisions related to protection and enhancement of visual resources and geologic hazards. According to the LCP Section 30253, minimization of adverse effects, new development shall do all of the following. One, minimize risks to life and property in areas of high geologic flood and fire hazard. Assure stability and structural integrity and neither create nor contribute significantly to erosion, geologic stability, or destruction of the site or surrounding area, or in any way require construction of protective devices that would substantially alter natural landforms along the bluffs and cliffs. The setbacks are inadequate, and siting must consider both the factor of safety for the overall slope as well as the expected erosion of the overall life of the project. Dr. Johnson, the Coastal Commission geologist, has determined that setbacks are inadequate and development would be endangered by coastal erosion and bluff retreat. Drainage proposed flows eastward toward the Arroyo and County Sewage Treatment Plant, and the drainage line would be bored through the coastal bluff and under an existing public access trail into a proposed rock dissipator to be constructed down coast of the lots. This drainage plan cannot be legally cited as proposed, as Arroyo developments are currently prohibited. The report from geotechnic investigation by the applicant is incomplete because the Arroyo is slated to become public open space, which is protected and prohibits installation and structures. In conclusion, please note that the proposed development would not minimize hazards, would not avoid landform alteration, would not provide 100 years of stability, would not avoid the need for shoreline anchoring, and would not adequately address coastal hazards, and is inconsistent with LCP natural hazards requirements. Thank you for your consideration.
John Shook. Mr. Shook, how much time will you need for your presentation?
3 minutes.
Thank you.
My name is John Shook, and I live in Aptos. I'm not a geologist, but I'm somewhat of an expert of the area in the sense that I've lived there for 22 years, and I've seen what the beach erosion is, as evidenced by how high the waves come up. I do know they come up to the bluff, but more importantly, it's the erosion on the bluff from Rio Del Mar Beach down to Hidden Beach. In the time I've been there, I've tried to do this, count them on my fingers. I've counted about 22 slides that have happened along the beach. And these aren't from the bluff. These are from groundwater just causing the bluff or the cliff to erode out. Hey, some are small, some are big. Some of them do damages to the houses down below. Some, you just don't do anything. But they're always enough to take out a little vegetation. There's always seemed to be enough that somebody will put out a huge tarp over it. And if you walk or go down that way, you'll see those tarps all the time. Or you'll see them build a retaining wall. I've seen people put in literally hundreds of thousands of dollars for a retaining wall, and I've seen some people out there just doing it themselves. The point I'm trying to make is that bluff is going to go down. If you do approve this, And there is some kind of slide, even though when you start, the visual acuity looks really good and these houses are beautiful and all the vegetation, and it really looks like the picture he showed. But in reality, the first time it slides down, up goes the retaining wall, up goes the plastic. You know, so in reality, we're all going to ultimately suffer. And so, you know, this is what you guys are here for, is to protect the coast, to protect the view. And I know that there's kind of a precedence being a sense, well, this house did it and this house didn't do it. You know, you've approved a lot of projects I didn't like. I've actually been here. I see all the same usual suspects behind me. But in reality, here's a good chance to do the right thing. Thank you.
Gary Walls. Would you state your name for the record and then tell me how much time you will need?
Yes, my name is Gary Walls, and I would use less than 5 minutes. I own 676 Bayview, my wife and I, and enjoy the area very much. As I've evaluated and seen and read a lot of the information on these, I really want to stand and support the staff and recommend denying of these applications. To me, again, there are two significant issues, the first being the public view shed and the impact that the structures will have, one, two, three, or ultimately all five, which I believe they've looked at it as a five-lot development intentionally and then tried to separate it so that they could parcelize how you evaluate it. As they put a 25 to 30-foot high two-story house on a bluff and the slope is probably 10 to 15 feet along that structure, in my opinion, that's much higher visual impact than they're trying to portray. The idea that to make these work, there's 4 to 8 foot retaining walls required, to me, is an objection to the view shed. And I believe that it is a violation of California Public Resource Code to not take this view shed into account. The second, as everybody's discussed, is in fact the issue of the setbacks. And I think it's really been proven that the slopes or the areas and the bluffs do erode and they will continue. There's been a lot of discussion, I understand, earlier about what history shows, but I really want to applaud Mr. Johnson and the commission for looking forward to what global climate change really has doing. Climate change and sea level rise is a fact. The only thing that's been disputed is really the extent, and again, I didn't hear anything from the applicant addressing what they believe the ultimate 100-year impact would be. And I support and believe with the study I've done that climate change is going to have a significant impact. As the sea level rises, there will be more. And as you look at the amount of impact, some of these lots, if I am correct, one lot requires 160 cubic yards of earth to be moved in a 7,000 square foot lot. To me, that's a significant impact and adds to the geological concern sitting on a bluff. So with that, I really ask that you deny the projects. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Jamieson, you want to come back for rebuttal, please? You have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to, first of all, finish the point I was trying to make before. The staff report says that this is a nuisance if it's not set back 100 feet or for 100 years. Otherwise, it's going to fall into the ocean. If you make that finding, I hope you will realize what you're doing. You've just declared every house in California that is within 100, not set back 100 years, a nuisance, a public nuisance, and government agencies have a responsibility to abate public nuisances. Now, what I want to say, I'm going to ask Mr. Zinn to answer a few questions too, but what I would like to, just to wrap up, we don't think that the erosion rate is wrong, okay? And we don't think you could deny development based on that. The scenic resources, you can't deny development. If you don't like the way the houses look, that's fine. I mean, you can suggest something else or direct staff to do something else. But our position is you cannot deny development. What I would like to say is just this. We have five geologists with much expertise and experience with Santa Cruz County coastline who have looked at the irrefutable evidence and concurred that the site-specific blufftop retreat rate is approximately 0.3 feet per year for the last 80 years, and that there has been essentially no erosion at the base of the cliff for 80 and probably on the order of 150 years. What the commission's geologist used was a very broad brush regional study with regional rates with which he came up an erosion rate three times that of the five geologists. Dr. Weber, after reviewing the commission geologist's report, this was earlier, submitted two separate technical papers explaining the site-specific evidence and where and why the commission's geologic data and analysis were in error. We have never received a response to Dr. Weber's responses, even though we know the commission's geologist agrees that site-specific evidence, if available, is clearly the protocol for measuring erosion. So we would like to ask the question, and hope the commission will ask the question, where are the five geologists who have looked at this wrong? Where are Mr. Zinn, Dr. Weber, Dr. Griggs, Mr. Hanna, and Mr. Johnson wrong? And that's the one question on which this whole decision turns in this case, Madam Chair, because if you take the commission geologist's approach, which is a drastic departure from the practices of the commission, which even he has embraced in the past, then there's no room to build within the setback. If you take the analysis and conclusions of the five geologists who have looked at the site-specific evidence, though, there is clearly room to build within the setback. And if that's the case, we don't have to get into all this business about a taking, which is only of interest to lawyers anyway. I've used up my time, Madam Chair. Thank you. I do have something that I meant to submit for the record earlier. I'm just going to submit it. It's not something you guys need to read, but I'm submitting it for the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And with that, I'll close the public hearing and return to staff.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We have a number of comments to make in response. And to begin, let me just first address a couple of the presentations on the adjacent properties and other approvals that may have occurred. First, with respect to the other houses that were shown in the PowerPoint presentation along the shoreline area, those are not, whatever approvals Santa Cruz County may have done in this general area are not relevant to today's proceeding to begin, but to the extent they may raise similar issues, they're all distinguishable, at least on a quick review of the materials. And for example, the Jeffrey Lane house has a very unique rock wall in front of it that's a geologically unique formation. A couple of the houses presented, the 15th Avenue house and the Coast View Road are on interior lagoon sites and do not raise the same questions at all. The Jeffrey Lane house similarly is not exposed to direct ocean forces. So we think even if those houses are, or approvals of the county are somehow relevant here, that they're clearly distinguishable from the issues we have at this specific site. Second, with respect to the visual arguments that were being made and the visual LCP questions that are raised here, this is in a special visually sensitive area as mapped in the LCP. That's a threshold inquiry for the county and the LCP, and the entire shoreline area of the county is designated as such virtually, as was mentioned. And that's an indicator that in making land use decisions in that area, the county is directed to pay special attention to questions of visual impact. Is this case extra special? Absolutely, it's extra special. If you look at the context that was presented to you of the surrounding urban development, there's a reason, several reasons this site has not been developed over time. One of them is its visual sensitivity. And what you have here, if you are able to experience, is really an oasis of open space and a visual resource within a highly urbanized area. And that's precisely why the visual issues are raised here. Development is contextual. Houses approved in other areas, the highly urban areas in the scenic sensitive area, raise different visual questions than are raised here. So I don't believe the staff recommendation is misleading on this point. It's a highly significant open space area within an urbanized area. We've evaluated the potential visual impacts here. We've been on site. We've looked at the views that would be impacted and believe it would be significant. That raises, in our view, inconsistencies with the LCP. Inconsistencies within LCP can be a basis of denial. To the extent we may be recommending a denial of a project, there may be questions of takings raised, and those will be addressed later on in this staff response. Susan Craig has one response to make at this point.
Regarding the lot line adjustments that Mr. Jamieson mentioned, at the time when the lot line adjustment was proposed, commission staff's concern was the legality of the existing lots. And once the commission staff's attorneys determined that the lots were legal and that the lot line adjustment was reducing the number of lots from 4 to 3, we did not evaluate the exclusion for the lot line adjustment any further.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Commissioners, I too, as you might suspect, have several points that I think need to respond to. I'll try to respond to everything, but bear with me as it's a bit disorganized. First, I would like to point out that the quotes of five geologists are wrong. I certainly am not implying that five geologists are wrong here. The question is, what will be the future erosion rate, not the historical erosion rate? Every one of the geologists who were cited by Mr. Jamieson were evaluating the past historical erosion rate. And that is a very useful piece of information for predicting the future, but it's not sufficient. And it is the future that you are tasked with at this point. And in fact, all of the data other than that from Mr. Zinn and Mr. Weber quoted values that were higher than the numbers that were used by Mr. Zinn and Mr. Weber in evaluating their setback. They were not as high as what I am recommending for a future bluff retreat rate, but they are higher than the 0.3 maximum that feet per year that Mr. Zinn used. I also will parenthetically point out, Mr. Jamieson said that if the base of the bluff does not erode, the top does not erode, which I think most of you know is patently false. Subaerial processes operating on a steep slope will make the top of the bluff retreat, regardless of whether the base is retreating. I would like to emphasize that just those features that the applicant is saying accounts for the low historic erosion rate at the site are those that are most susceptible to sea level rise. The wide sandy beach and the colluvial buttresses are not likely to stick around with additional sea level rise, and I think that it is safe to say that we can expect a fairly dramatic increase in the bluff retreat rate at this location over the next 100 years. I'd also like to emphasize that my analysis was site-specific. The applicants evidently object to making use of data available that are not directly in front of their parcels. I feel that it's important to evaluate site-specific data in the context of local or even regional data. They continually cited my use of data that was not directly from their parcels as broad brush, regional. We're only talking about a couple hundred feet difference, and I sincerely believe that it is important to look on that scale to place the parcel data into context. The geologic conditions are very similar at those sites, and in fact, the subject site I would expect to be more susceptible because it is not currently protected by shoreline protection, and because it's at the juncture of a arroyo, an intermittent stream, and the ocean, and those sites usually have higher erosion rates. The fact that the photo analysis of Mr. Zinn shows a lower erosion rate than immediately up and down coast is therefore suspect. It may not be wrong, it may be correct, but it needs to be explained. It may be something as simple as the episodicity of erosion, that it just hasn't seen a rapid erosion event yet. Mr. Jameson placed a fair amount of emphasis on this email that he used in his PowerPoint from Dr. Gary Griggs. I would like to emphasize a few things that Mr. Jameson did not emphasize and a few things that Dr. Griggs carefully did not say. First of all, he was very clear that he is talking about when he says that people who have worked in the area feel that the broad fronting beach provides good evidence that the bluffs have been removed from wave attack for many years. I would concur with that. They have seen periodic wave attack, not quite as rare as the applicant indicates, but that they have been protected by the wide sandy beach. Again, that is in the past. I would expect that to increase in the future. He also emphasized Dr. Griggs' characterization that there has been little overall change in the position of the base of the bluff. Again, the emphasis has been on historical rates of erosion and erosion of the base of the bluff throughout this Mr. Jameson's presentation. What is not highlighted in the email is that this may change in the future with a significant rise in sea level. That's what you're tasked to address. As far as the other houses that are closer to the bluff edge, some overhanging the bluff edge, some that have been recently approved with smaller setbacks, we're not here to evaluate those, and in fact, I'm not familiar with the five developments that were highlighted by Mr. Jameson. I would need to make an analysis of each of those in those cases, but several of those are protected by armor. Some of them are protected by, many of the houses in that area are protected by upper bluff retaining walls. And frankly, we may have made mistakes in not appealing some of those. But these were appealed to us, and my evaluation is that in order to assure stability for the LCP required 100 years without use of engineering solutions such as deepened foundations and retaining walls, 116-foot setback is my best estimate of what will account for that in light of future sea level rise. And I will be happy to answer any of your questions you may have.
Does that conclude, staff?
Thank you. And we have a few more additional legal points we wanted to address that were raised by the applicant, both during his presentation and in some of the numerous letters that were received by the commission. First, there has been some additional talk about the unity of ownership that the staff report discusses, and the applicant is contesting that. First of all, I do want to point back to the staff report, and there is an extensive discussion of the elements that the commission staff found in looking at whether these parcels can be looked at as having a unity of ownership. Some of the elements are, and that begins on page 24, the parcels were all acquired together. At the time of the appeal, they were all still owned together. After the first staff report came out, the applicant came back and told us he had transferred two of them into two LLCs. But an additional element that we've found is also that under the Revenue and Taxation Code, Section 62A2, a change in ownership does not include a transfer between an individual and a legal entity that results solely in a change of the method of holding title to the real property and in which proportional ownership interests of the transferors and transferees remain the same after transfer. And as far as we can tell here, that seems to be what's happened. There was no recordation of the new owner. There seems to have been no transfer tax paid on the transfer. And even during Mr. Jameson's presentation, although he stated at the beginning that the LLCs were the owners of the second two parcels, he continued to refer to Mr. Frank as the owner and the controller in different portions of his testimony, for example, stating that Mr. Frank didn't want to own lots 2 and 3 in a state of open space, indicating that he seems to be owning all of them to the state. In addition, this relates as well to one of the points raised in his letters, where he disagreed about the applications being heard together under Commission's regulation section 13058 and claimed that the issues were not common, and at the beginning of his presentation stated that he had three different parcels to address. However, he's implicitly acknowledged that the issues between the parcels are common. He did not separate the parcels out one by one in his presentation. He simply addressed them all together. The geology report that the commission received was one report entitled Frank Lands, addressing all of them together. In fact, as we think you've seen, the geology issues are largely similar, the analysis is largely similar between the three properties, and the commission's preparation of a staff report together comports with the way it has heard staff reports together on other applications. In addition, the applicant has claimed that the commission's regulations on appeals are invalid. He refers to section 13573 and claims that the exhaustion of local appeals regulation is not valid, and therefore the commission doesn't have jurisdiction to hear this appeal. He does not cite to and cannot cite to any challenge to that regulation. That regulation has never been challenged, and it's presumptively valid, and the appellants and the commission are entitled to rely on a valid application that has never had a legal challenge to it. With regard to his point that the commission is finding a public nuisance, the commission, in its analysis of the result of what would happen from the applicant's proposal, found that one of the reasons for the denial is that a public nuisance would occur. However, that does not have the legal effect of declaring a public nuisance. The commission does not declare public nuisances. That's not a function of the commission. However, the commission is supposed to consider what the outcome is of a proposed application and may use that in its analysis and its drawing its conclusions, but it is not the case that the commission would be finding and declaring a public nuisance by adopting the staff report today. And with that, if there are any further questions, I'm available.
Does that conclude the staff presentation?
Yes, that does.
Thank you. I'll return to the commission. Commissioner Stone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number A-3-SCO-09-001 pursuant to the staff recommendation, and I'm recommending a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Mercurimi. Do you want to speak to your motion, or do you want to make three motions, or?
Well, I'd like to, my comments would address all three motions.
Okay,
so perhaps, because it is sort of a package, if I could just make comments with respect to all three and then maybe roll through the
That'll
other ones
fine.
As appropriate. This is an interesting case before us and does represent some significant conflicting opinion that has been presented to us both by applicant and our geologist. And it's interesting for me to see the comparison of the five geologists and poor Dr. Johnson there, which leads me to believe, I guess, that he's doing the work of five. Although I must say that one of the geologists is the County of Santa Cruz geologist, Joe Hanna, an excellent, another hardworking public employee, an excellent and very, very credible geologist. But Dr. Johnson's point is very well taken that looking to the future, I think, is our job in this role. And while it's interesting, the dynamic, our staff was criticized for not using site-specific but more general coastal concepts in addressing the issue of erosion rate. It is interesting to note that the applicant used Sunset Beach, the trees at Sunset Beach, which I guess have been there for quite some time, I didn't realize. But note for the commissioners that that is a place that is quite a bit south, and not whatever erosion rates may or may not be there, really not applicable to this site. So let's look at specifically the site. And applicants' own photographs from the 1953 to the modern, that comparison of this specific site, I think you can see quite a bit of erosion there. At least the arroyo is quite a bit wider now than it was before. I think talking to the amount of erosion, the dynamic forces that are at work there, and if you look at this arroyo and this bluff and the proposed at least the two proposed houses, and the motion, I realize the motion I made is on the first house, but speaking to the other ones, I am in support of staff's recommendation of denial of those two, because those two represent development that is on a peninsula, if you will, stepping out into the arroyo, which I think does bring some, raise some significant questions with respect to visual impact and the safety and the long-term viability of any development that is on that spot. So I think staff definitely got it right with respect to the erosion potential that is there, and we should be very cautious about citing anything. There were numerous examples brought up about Santa Cruz County. I apologize for any inappropriate development that's there, and especially the sewage pumping plant that's in the arroyo. Clearly a visual impact, but again, I'll apologize for that. But I'm not sure that that's necessarily germane. We shouldn't be adding to the problems with the visual impact that what is projected before us represents. Clearly, it's a vulnerable site. And to put two houses up there that we know are going to then be subjected to the forces of erosion over time, you saw photographs from Dr. Johnson that shows the wave run up all the way up to that bluff. And you can imagine high water there, high wave run up onto the bluff, added to it a lot of water coming down that arroyo, as does happen with high rainfall areas, and the dynamic forces working that area again show that it is, I think, a very vulnerable area, and we should not be considering the development at that site. I think that's pretty much, and in addition, the sea level rise, looking forward again, the effects of sea level rise on this area probably are going to be very dramatic and add to the increase of erosion there. So again, I think staff looking forward, looking at the potential risk that any development on these sites represent, did get their analysis correct. And that is why I think that the one house on that one lot is appropriate, but the setbacks that staff is asking us to impose here, I think, are very, very appropriate.
Thank you. Commissioner Marcorini?
How about never mind? Thank you.
Commissioner Sanchez?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am convinced by the analysis and expert testimony of Dr. Weber, as well as the analysis contained in the staff report. The applicant's expert did not, I find that the applicant's expert did not take into consideration global warming, sea level rise, climate change. In essence, I find that the applicant's expert testimony was flawed and wholly lacking in factual and scientific analysis. In addition, I'm persuaded by the public testimony that provided some evidence of bluff erosion failure in the project area. Thank you.
Commissioner Bloom?
I'll be supporting the motion for two primary reasons. One, Commissioner Stone very capably laid out, and that has to do with the addressing the issue of sea level rise and the looking forward on the issue of the geology. I would just point out that as a non-scientist and a non-geologist, I appreciate the level of discussion and dialogue. I'm learning a lot about geology, continue to be a student in this subject, and just appreciate hearing about all of these issues. The second reason for my supporting the motion has to do with the issue of protecting public vistas as set forth in the LCP. I think it was Mr. Lester, described this bluff as an oasis of open space, and that was the way I looked at it when I saw the photographs. And the LCP requires the disruption of landform and aesthetic character be minimized, that the structural design minimize that. And in my view, the structures as they're designed, particularly from the view from the path, do not do so. I think these structures could have and should have been designed in a much different way that would have helped minimize their impact from that path, and perhaps from the beach as well.
Thank you. Commissioner Secord.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It would appear that we're commenting on both the first motion and the other two simultaneously, and with that, I'm going to say I support the first motion. I believe I live on a coastal bluff and have for about 40 years. In Santa Barbara, we have a 75-year setback, and the burden strikes me here is a problem of that 100-year setback and the way to how do you respect it, how do you study it. Erosion, past erosion is predictive of future erosion, but it doesn't account for somebody leaving a garden hose running on the top of a cliff or not dealing with gophers or some other rain event that can erode the top of the cliff. So it's a tough barrier to try to look out 100 years. I agree that there's been some use of regional data to talk about a specific site, but on the other hand, using data from all over is sort of like getting a medical second opinion. It's not a burden. It's a benefit to look elsewhere. Even for example, Dr. Johnson showed a slide of a retaining wall with its concrete footings exposed, and I don't know. I can't find a copy of that picture in my voluminous materials. But here we have somebody that built a retaining wall, and the concrete's already, and that's erosion from the top of a bluff, wherever the retaining wall is, and we don't know how far it is east or west from this property. So it could be misleading, or it could be completely accurate. But I think that the first house is fine, and at the second and third just strikes me as maybe 10 pounds of material in an 8-pound bag. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other commissioner comments? Then I'll make some comments. I agree with Commissioner Stone and with our staff. I think they've got this right. I realize we listened to a lot of evidence from a number of geologists, but our staff is quite good in the way in which they do this their analysis, and I think they're quite accurate about the importance of what will happen in the future. About you may have a wide sandy beach now, but with sea level rise, that's not going to offer you protection. I also think that some of the statements made by the applicant's agent, I again agree that to say that talk in terms of simply the erosion of the base of the bluff and ignore the erosion at the top of the bluff is simply inaccurate. Also, there was an assertion made that somehow because you've had a very high rate of erosion during the last period, that therefore that means that in the future it has to be lower. It absolutely cannot be that rate. Well, I don't know how you can make that kind of assertion. And so overall, I think our geologist has it right. He actually tends to be on the conservative side, so I'm certainly comfortable with that. And I think the whole issue of views staff is correct. In this particular, from this particular area, the view impact would be significant. And how you look at views has to do with the vantage point at which you look at them. Showing me an aerial photo of it and then saying there's no visual impact simply doesn't do it. And this is an oasis, an area that is that the way it is for a reason. So I will be supporting the staff on the various motions. With that, shall we call the roll? Is there a necessary for a roll call on the first motion? Maker and seconder are recommending a yes vote. The passage of this motion will result in the approval of the coastal development permit as condition and adoption of the following resolution and findings. Any objection to the unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the staff recommendation, the project is approved. Motion two.
Thank you. I move that the commission approve coastal development permit number A-3-SCO-09-002 for the development proposed by the applicant, and I'm recommending a no vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Mercurimi. Again, a no vote failure will mean failure of this motion, will result in denial of a coastal development permit and adoption of the following resolution and findings in the staff report. Again, any objection to a unanimous roll call? No. There's no request for a roll call? Seeing none?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
Can I, just for clarification, we're assuming all of the previous comments are incorporated into this motion?
Absolutely. All of the previous comments with regards to this application and the subsequent application have been incorporated into our discussion and our reasons. Yes, Mr.
Yes, and Madam Chair, also obviously Council's comments on the unity of ownership incorporated into each of these findings.
Yes, I would say that all of the comments of both staff and commissioners and staff reports are incorporated.
Yes, and this was one hearing on all three, so that one hearing applies to all three to the extent that anybody wants to say something different about a different motion is the only difference.
I think that that's clear to all the commissioners. Is there a need for a roll call vote? Seeing none, the commission has denied the application. And let's go to the third motion, please.
Move that the commission approve coastal development permit number A-3-SCO-09-003 for the development proposed by the applicant, and I'm recommending a no vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stone, seconded by Commissioner Mercurimi. The no vote will result in the failure of this motion, will result in the denial of the coastal development permit and adoption of the resolution and findings in the staff report. And again, everything that we said in relationship to incorporation of all of the statements of the staff, the commissioners, and the members of the public applies to this application as well. Is there a need for a roll call vote? Seeing none, the commission has denied the permit application.
So I believe that brings us to the energy agenda.
Where's the team? Here comes the team.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. First today, I have two de minimis waivers to report that were provided to you yesterday. We've received no objections, and so we are seeking your concurrence in the Executive Director's determination to issue these.
Any objection to Commission concurrence? Seeing none, the Commission has concurred.
Thank you. That takes us to item 11A. This is an application by Bioarchitecture Lab for a pilot project to anchor for 7 months a submerged kelp cultivation structure within an existing kelp mariculture lease area located offshore of the city of Goleta. The pilot project is part of a 2-year Department of Energy funded research effort to develop biofuel from farmed giant kelp plants. The structure, which will include grow out lines, anchors, and surface buoys, would be spread over roughly 3.87 acres and used to grow and harvest about 50,000 giant kelp plants. And during the test period, the kelp would be periodically harvested and used at a biofuel research laboratory. At the completion of the in-water research period, the grow out structure will be removed. Portions of the project site support...
I don't think we have a quorum. Yeah, we need to wait for somebody else to come back in. Or do we need a break? Okay, we have a quorum. Continue.
Portions of the project site support existing beds of kelp and eelgrass. Based on concerns that staff raised early on in the application review process, the applicant modified the original proposal to reduce habitat impacts. They reduced the number of grow-out structures to just one and changed its proposed location. But even in spite of these changes, existing kelp and eelgrass habitat cannot be avoided completely here. To address habitat impacts, we developed in Special Conditions 1 and 2 detailed requirements for kelp and eelgrass monitoring and restoration plans. For impacts to existing kelp, staff is recommending an approach adopted by this commission in some prior decisions. This area is known to support a robust population of fast-growing kelp plants. Rapid natural recovery is therefore likely to occur following any disturbance to kelp habitat. We're recommending that for 2 years the applicant monitor for natural kelp recovery prior to evaluating the need to mitigate for the loss of kelp plants. If after 2 years the disturbed areas have not naturally recovered, then the mitigation requirements would be triggered. Now, since the date the staff report was published, we received the project engineering analysis to ensure that the structure can withstand a 25-year storm event. It concludes that more and bigger concrete anchors are needed than what was described in the original project proposal. Additional anchors means that there will be a somewhat larger disturbance area than originally estimated, about an additional 110 square feet in kelp impacts and another 88 square feet of eelgrass. We reflected these changes, among some others, in an addendum to the staff report. We are recommending that you approve the project as conditioned with the changes reflected in the staff addendum. The motion and resolution are on page 3 of the staff report, and that concludes the staff presentation on this item.
Any ex parte communications to report? Seeing none, I will open the public hearing. Beth Zotter, do you have a need to speak?
Hi, thank you for giving me a chance to speak.
And how much time will you need for your presentation?
1 minute.
Okay, thank you. Set the clock for two.
Okay.
And state your name for the record.
My name is Beth Zotter, and I'm a project manager at Bioarchitecture Lab over in Berkeley. I just wanted to say that we agree with the recommendation to approve, but I also wanted to say that the commission has a mandate to sustain the biological productivity of coastal waters, and I wanted to bring it to the commission's attention that Bioarchitecture Lab shares the same goal. In fact, our goal is to increase the biological productivity of coastal waters by planting forests. If our mission succeeds, kelp farms will contribute very significantly to capturing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and will increase the coverage of kelp along the coast. It will also increase the primary production that forms the basis of marine food webs. And at the same time, we'll be helping to provide the solutions to the societal goal of sustainable and renewable fuels that will replace fossil fuels. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. With that, we'll close the public hearing. Return to staff. Any additional comments?
No, Madam Chair.
Right. Commissioner Secord?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very excited about this project, and I will move its approval. I move that the Commission approve the Coastal Development Permit E-10-008, subject to conditions set forth in the staff recommendation and the addendum specified below. Recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Secord, seconded by Commissioner Bloom. Any further discussion? Anyone?
Just briefly, if I may.
Yes.
One of the precious things about Santa Barbara is the Goleta Beach, and the Goleta Beach has been vulnerable for a number of years. One of the reasons why it's vulnerable is that the El Nino storms took out the kelp, and so the kelp simply isn't there, and the beach is open to wave and tidal action, and it's been a serious problem. There have been armoring procedures done over the years that have been obnoxious to this commission, though they have not been obnoxious to the Goleta Beach. If this project succeeds, then the Goleta Beach will be protected, and that is my ultimate goal because I think it's a valuable resource visited by something like a million people a year and worthy of protection. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other comments? Is it necessary to have a roll call? Seeing no objections, the project is approved.
Thank you. Item 12A is a request by the fiber optic cable company Tata Communications to modify its coastal permit and consistency certification for an offshore trans-Pacific cable project that was approved by this commission back in 2001. Around that same time period, this commission approved another 7 offshore cable system projects. In all of them, the commission required that each cable be buried in soft sediment where feasible to avoid interference with fishing gear and to prevent marine mammal entanglements. Each approval required that every cable be surveyed every 18 to 24 months to determine if buried cable remains buried, and if previously buried cable becomes unburied, it was to be reburied. By 2005, the cable companies had completed 2 rounds of surveys that showed that buried cable was generally remaining buried and stable, and that there was no interference with fishing and no evidence of entanglement with marine mammals. And based on these results and the fact that conducting these surveys actually causes some impacts, such as significant air emissions, this commission, starting in 2006, approved amendments to 5 of these permits to extend the survey interval to every 5 years. And similar to the other surveys, the results of Tata Communications survey shows that there's no significant change in cable placement or exposure. Thus, in this request, they propose to amend their permit, specifically Special Condition 18, and their consistency certification to extend the survey interval to every 5 years. There have been no complaints by the fishing community of snagged gear, and the survey results do not show any evidence of ghost nets and trapped marine mammals. Attachment 1 of the staff report is a letter by the local affected fishing community supporting the proposed change to the survey interval. We're recommending that you approve the permit amendment and the modification to the consistency certification. There are 2 motions and resolutions needed for this item, starting on page 3 of the staff report. And that concludes the staff presentation.
Thank you. I have no speaker slips, so I will go to the commission. Is the will of the commission? Can I get a motion?
I move that the commission approve the proposed amendment to Coastal Development Permit E-01-029-A3. Recommended yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Secord Sanchez and seconded by Commissioner Secord. Maker of the motion is recommending a yes vote. Passage of this motion will result in approval of the amendment and adoption of the resolution and findings. Anyone want to speak? Any comments? Any objection to a unanimous roll call vote? Seeing none, the commission has approved the amendment.
Second motion?
Yes.
I move that the commission concur with Tata Communications Inc.'s modification to consistency certification CC-111-10 for the proposed change in survey intervals, finding that, number 1, the coastal zone effects are not substantially different than originally described, and 2, the project as modified continues to be consistent with the enforceable policies of the California Coastal Management Program, and recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Sanchez, seconded by Commissioner Secord. Maker of the motion is recommending a yes vote. Any discussion? Any objection to a unanimous roll call? Seeing none, the commission has approved the modification of the consistency certification.
Your last item of the day will be briefly handled by Larry Simone.
This item's proposed revised findings for Corps of Engineers consistency determination for maintenance dredging at Marina Del Rey Harbor in Los Angeles County with disposal at the Port of Long Beach and on Dockweiler and Redondo beaches. The original staff report acted on by the commission at your August meeting recommended concurrence with the consistency determination. However, the commission attached a condition to its concurrence which called for the Corps of Engineers to undertake toxicity testing of all sediments designated for beach and nearshore disposal. That condition language, as well as the findings to support that condition, are found on page 16 of your staff report. The motion for approval of the revised findings is found on page 5 of your report. Only those commissioners on the prevailing side of the August vote are eligible to vote on these findings today. That would include Commissioner Schallenberger, Commissioner Bloom, Commissioner Secord, Commissioner Mercurimi, Commissioner Stone, Vice Chair Sanchez, and Chair Juan. That concludes the staff report.
Thank you. I have no speaker slips on this. Commissioner Bloom?
I move that the Commission adopt the revised findings in support of the Commission's action on August 12, 2010, concerning the Corps of Engineers Consistency Determination CD-035-10 for maintenance dredging of Marina Del Rey Harbor entrance channels and disposal of dredged materials at Dockweiler and Redondo beaches, adjacent nearshore waters, and Slip 1 in the Port of Long Beach. That's a mouthful. I recommend a yes vote.
Moved by Commissioner Bloom, seconded by Commissioner Secord. Would you like to discuss the motion?
No, thank you.
Any comments? Any other commissioners who'd like to discuss this? By a show of hands, those commissioners on the prevailing side. It's one, two, it's unanimous, and I've been asked to mention the names, so I'm going to go Bloom, Schallenberger, Mercurimi, Juan, Sanchez, Stone, and Secord. Approve the motion. Revised findings are adopted. I think that concludes it for today. Is that it? Staff? So, yes? Well, I would like to say one thing. We'll see you next year. Everyone have very happy holidays. And Commissioner Mercurimi has something to say.
Anyway, thank you, everybody, for coming to San Francisco and allowing us to host the Coastal Commission. I just wanted to acknowledge the participants that made the reception yesterday possible. It's a quaint little reception, but the food that was contributed all came from my district. I represent part of Japantown, so a couple of restaurants within Japantown had contributed sushi. Then on Fillmore Street, which is really the epicenter of where the African-American population had been, the jazz population. A couple of soul food restaurants known as 1300 and Gussie's also contributed to the yesterday. So very much thank you for gracing us with your presence in City Hall. And thank you to Mayor Newsom, Lieutenant Governor-elect, for also stopping by. Thank you.
We're adjourned.